icy winds that seem to glow whip across the tundra, flaying a man from his very soul.
The Silver Key Lodge would cordially invite you to a gentlemen's and ladies' gathering tomorrow night betwixt the hours of 1 and 3 at the following location.
Visiting hours for the domes will begin in 10 minutes. Have your dedications ready.
There are a display of books behind rope and glass, of which read King in Yellow, Nameless Cults, and the Necronomicon.
Jeremiah was an old one. He was a good God of mine. Da-da-da. Never understood a single word he said, but he always had some mighty fight.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Fandible.com, my role-playing podcast. I wanted to stop the sing-along as quickly as I could. I'm Dave, and we are going to be playing Fiasco, very specifically the playset Book Hounds of London, written by the people who wrote the same a game of the same name or expansion of the same name for Trail of Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. And so we are all set with the setup. We didn't record the setup because we thought it might bore the tears out of you. Mm-hmm. And if we want the tears to flow, we want them to flow hard and fast, mm-hmm. and not from the setup.
But mostly from David's dice rolls.
Indeed.
And this is this game doesn't really have any more dice rolls. Well, we're done.
No, I'm going to find a way. I'm going to find a way to roll 10d6 and have them all land on their edge. So now...
It's like you picked up a handful of white dice. When they hit the table, they turn dark.
Yeah, exactly. They turn into black dice. Yeah, exactly. How did you get the non-Euclidean dice, David? I don't know. We're going to be playing, I almost said Bulldogs of London, which would be the weirdest crossover for a game that we played. No, we're playing, Book Hounds of London, where we all play ne'er-do-wells in, Depression era, London. So let's go around the table and introduce ourselves, starting from my left.
Good. Hello, this is Jesus Rodriguez, and today I'm playing Harold Green, old man, purveyor of various books for both regular viewers and those of the occult nature. That's about it, really. I mean, I hang out, I do things, I like going to the beach.
Make sure your thingy's not touching your thingy. We'll keep that nice and bent for you people.
That's technical.
That is technical.
Right
talk right
in
there.
To the right into the comments. If we get a little too technical for you guys, we can try to slow it down.
All right.
So your thing is no longer touching your thingy because you bent it then.
Okay. It's not like a duck. And as Harold Green, that's about it for me, really. Pugmate.
All right, this is Dan. Hi. Oh, hi, people. Hi. Good to see you. You're looking great tonight, by the way. And, I'm playing.
I know what you look like.
I'm playing, Ernest Young. 73 years old. I haven't told the truth in at least a decade. Regular, frequenter of the Kit Kat Club and all the pleasures therein. Mostly the alcohol. I can't even see the girls these days. Mostly because of the alcohol.
They got twice as many of them now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure those are girls. You're looking at the bar, sir. The ball's supposed to be dancing?
Yeah. Did you say dancing or dancing?
Yes.
Oh, they will break you.
And I'm mostly involved in this because I actually don't... I'm not sure quite how I'm going to be drawn into this whole thing, but yeah.
Hi, everybody. This is Angela. I'm playing Vera Hughes, and I am a fortune teller here in London. Unbeknownst to my clientele, I'm a little bit of a charlatan, but they don't need to know that so long as they're willing to be parted with their money, as most fools are. And my partner in crime is...
Hi, my name is Eugene Winkle, but, that's my birth name, my real name. I came when I crossed the pond, from, Great New York. My name is, check it out. Fitzpatrick's.
I tried sweet. To talk him out of it. Ladies.
Fitzpatrick. Hey, you talked me out of Fitzgerald because of that hack of a rider, but Fitzpatrick's, that's what I'm liking. That's a winner's name right there. And, you know, I do some things for the fortune teller. She gets me, she predicts, or at least tells me what she hears from her clientele, and I steal it, and I have a good fence, which, I give, all the stuff to, and he pays me good, and my, fence is named, oh, by the way, that was Billy.
Everybody welcome the newest member of Fandible, nameless person.
No, that was the often heard of, never actually seen Gary.
Gary, get back into the... Okay, sorry about that. This is Billy, and I'm playing... I'll be taking over the role as Eugene.
Yeah, it's really incredible how Gary's totally nailed down the Billy sound, like imitation with his voice.
He has nothing else to do when we keep him locked up under the closet.
No, it's also really weird how he's measured both Billy's and his faces. I don't understand. Probably for some sort of Cthulhu mask, I imagine. Right. Good evening, everybody. This is David. I'm going to be playing Jeremiah Rumworth, Esquire. Jeremiah is a purveyor of fine books as well. In fact, he is a rival book scout to Jesus's Harold Green.
Lower book scout is my definition of the word.
Lower book scout, because apparently book scouts go in height like a totem pole. Unfortunately... and I want us to go around the table and explain to the nice people what our relationships are so they can know exactly why we're about to do the diabolical and nincompoop things we are going to engage in. Jesus's Harold and my Jeremiah have a need. We are competing as book scouts, but unfortunately we're bound together by a bad times, which is Haster's Curse. At some point during our travels, during our competitive travels, we've both gotten our hands on copies of The King in Yellow. Unfortunately, due to some shenanigans and mix-ups, we both were victims of Haster's Curse. The problem being that the text that we had both sought after so feverishly neglected to explain what Haster's Curse entails. So we are both hyper-vigilant with methods to get out from under and any sort of affliction from Haster's Curse. Jesus and Daniel, what are your... relationships?
For me and Daniel, our relationships currently for friendship is we're pub mates, always frequent purveyors of the Kit Kat Club's good, mainly the alcohol.
Yep.
And that's
and
about
the fact
it.
That we're pretty much the only two people in London that can stand each other.
Solid.
That
is true.
The alcohol may have something to do with
yes.
that too.
Yeah.
Definitely. Got it.
You imagine if we met each other sober, I'd kill you.
So yeah. Daniel, do you and Jesus or you and Angela have a need?
No,
are you needless?
We are needless.
Yeah, we are needless. Like, it was like the one need, and then everything else was location, location, location.
Yep. Oh, shucks.
I got three words for you. Location, 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 location.
Okay, great. You are literally going to be the guy kind of going along. listeners, we're using kind of a modified rules that streamline the process we find. So if it sounds strange that Daniel doesn't have a need, that's fine. That means he's a man of anything. Mm-hmm. He wants and can get anything. Mm-hmm. Angie?
I have my relationship, Vera's relationship with Eugene. We are charlatans who are faking it, and our need is to score the Necronomicon.
Yes, because that never goes poorly in a Lovecraft tale. Perfect. Perfect. And as for myself and young William, do you have it in frame?
What is it?
Oh, criminals. There we go.
We have no need.
We have no need. Okay.
So, most likely...
Oh, that's right.
I'm the thief, you're my fence, and most likely you will be using, when I steal the Necronomicon, I will give it to you to get money.
Mm-hmm.
As one does.
Yeah, with the Necronomicon.
No, high ticket item. Yeah. High price ticket item there.
Go big or go home.
Absolutely. Let's begin. Now, normally it's supposed to be whoever grew up in the smallest town. Billy, that is you.
Okay.
If you don't want to go, we can move it to somebody else.
The scene begins then.
Okay. Would you like to establish or resolve your scene?
I would like to resolve my scene for now.
Okay, so players around the table.
Mm-hmm.
What would we like to subject young Master Billy to? I'm imagining he is a charlatan. I would propose that the...
actually, can I just take a stab at setting the scene?
But sure. Then you can't resolve it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
The scene starts in Vera Hughes's chamber, as she calls it, her shop, her fortune teller abode, where she is, of course, entertaining or, you know, helping a client in need, a man of very thick fat, well-dressed, wishing to speak to his long-departed Chimera, his cat. And it is my job, right, and as Angela is waving her arms around, calling forth, summoning forth the voice of Chimera.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Eugene is currently holding a bag of cats. actually, just one cat. He'll trying to keep it muffled as he hides behind, under the table of the fortune teller. And he has a small pin. And the cat is like scratching at him, and each time he's bucking, and you know the table's bucking a little bit, and of course the guy looks down confused why the table is moving at this point.
I say, Miss Vera, is this normal?
Your cat has, though it has left this mortal realm, it has much spirit in it.
Yes, Clamara was always a spunky one, wasn't he? What? Is that you, darling? Here, kitty, kitty. Oh, just like she was in life.
The cat reaches up, of course, scratching Eugene yep. across the nose. And, son of a bitch!
I say, Miss Vera, it's rather unbecoming of a lady to use that kind of nonsense word.
I apologize. I have a bit of an allergy. To felines.
I'm terribly sorry, but good thing this one's dead, isn't that right?
Indeed.
Oh, I'm rather...
Suddenly the cat scratches across my face, Eugene releasing it. It runs between your legs, mm-hmm. Out the door, and just leaves me there as you, the old man, finally starts asking his questions towards the cat.
Chimera? Chimera, darling. Are you safe? That's strange. She sounds morose. That's the sound she would always make whenever I couldn't find her favorite toy.
She is quite lonely. She does not have her favorite toy anymore. What did you do with her favorite toy when she departed?
I buried it with her. Is that a natural Christian thing to do? Is there bury your cat's favorite toy? Is there a favorite cat? You know, much like the great pharaohs that I've been reading so much about in the Penny Dreadfuls, that I'm going to be buried with her. Is there a favorite servant? You understand? No expense was spared for her tomb. In the graveyard, next to that strange sound tomb that everyone complains about. In the burial ground where they told me not to bury my cat.
Eugene is prodding Vera now in the leg, trying to get her attention, mouthing like, "I don't have the cat. It's gone."
So Vera looks between her legs, and you're like, faces there,
yeah.
Where like her notes for the client are like scattered over you.
I'm so sorry. I got a fear of cats.
What else is she saying? What else is she saying? What?
Chimera is she misses you very, very much. Her most devoted servant.
Oh, I missed you too, Chimera. My days without you are nothing but wandering times. Yeah. As if I'm lost in time and space, as if it were. It's impossible. Is that Rodney, my old horse? Rodney, are you there too? I swear, I didn't know that that's what they were going to do to you at the factory.
Oh no, are they fighting? No, not my prized steed. And he was a good run until he wasn't, you understand? I had to do the right.
She's feeling quite jealous that you had other companions before
her. We were never each other's first, so you were a rescue. And, I got you from the late, Dame Wellsworth.
My character looks, you know, you finally, like, Farrah kicks my character away, so he's hiding.
I'm sorry. I'm kicking you.
My character just kind of doesn't know what to do, and then suddenly he sees the cat that had been released, and it's like flicking at the cord hanging on the drapes. And is that a good?
Okay, so I'm pulling for listeners at home, pulling a white die. Everyone's in nodding, so this ends well for you.
And my character's like shaking his head, no, like no. Don't do it. Because I see the cord get closer and closer to the candelabra mm-hmm. that's there with the flames. And slowly but surely, it starts catching.
Mm-hmm.
And you see my character, like, you know, man, like, trench crawling towards it. Finally, I get to the cord as it starts to travel up. The flame starts to travel up the cord. I grab it and I start, you know, trying to put it out. Just as, you know, making noise, the man turns around just as the curtain comes off and falls on top of me, and I look very ghostly, and the cat, as I'm saying, is like, I step on its tail. And
Great Scott! You've been turned into a phantasmal human! Finally, you can reach your own snacks on the wall! This is fantastic! There is heaven! No, Glamera, please, don't strike out at your old man. I will be there to join you post haste once because of my gout. You see, it's moving along quite quickly. No, tell me what you want. He gets down on two knees, like, tell me how can I appease your vengeful and wayward spirit.
Yes, Glamera, how can he appease your vengeful spirit?
As the rotund man gets down on both knees with great, great, effort, his rather equally, full of life, if you will, wallet pokes out from his back pocket.
Please tell me, what can I do? What can I do?
I require your wallet for cat things.
My wallet. Oh, I understand.
And he takes out his wallet and he he attaches his watch to it, his silver watch, which dangles in the light of the candelabra.
That's a good kitty, that's a good kitty, now go get it!
And throws it, like, into, behind the curtain that sits behind Miss Farrah.
Go get it, go get it!
Yeah. And I slowly stumble towards it, picking up the watch, and the next thing you hear from the curtain, is like a clank.
Yeah.
And as the wind starts to blow the curtain, it looks like the ghost completely has disappeared, but you see an open window now. There's no wallet.
Good God. Miss Farrah, I'm afraid that my ethereal cat has stolen my means to pay you.
Close. All right. So Billy pulled off on a rather impossible con on a desperate and sad man who barely has a pet cemetery's worth of bodies buried on his estate's property. All right, so next will be me.
So do I get to keep this?
You get to keep that.
Yay.
You get to keep that, yep.
Is it the second half where you have to give it away?
Right, okay, I have to check the rules because I did it wrong. Billy, you were awarded a white die, which you can now give to someone else on the table.
Mine!
No, in the second
it's
half.
Mine!
My mistake.
Angela, because you played a very great fortune teller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of our listeners missed my excellent miming skills of having a crystal ball.
Yeah, no, it was like ABBA on stage. It was amazing. all right, so now it goes on to me. Onto Jeremiah Rumworth, Esquire, mm-hmm. Who is going to be currently at... let's see. I will establish the scene as well. I'm going to put on my glasses because I am blind as a bat. Mm-hmm. Speaking of bat, our scene unfolds in the dank recesses of an expanded cellar somewhere in the bottom of a grand estate in the outskirts of London. Jeremiah and his enemy, friend, frenemy cohort, Harold Green, are fast on the trail of ancient writings that were built into the foundation of this estate from an Egyptologist who died many years ago. As far as they can discern, through hard work and then begrudgingly giving each other one another's notes, that these hieroglyphs might lead to the lifting of Hastur's curse. Mm-hmm. And they are currently walking over planks of wood, rotting planks of wood, that span a cavernous pitfall, of which architecturally they have no idea why they are there.
So the question is, was this built in, or did they just have a digging fetish?
Well, that was the last character.
Well, I believe that is...
Well, don't fall down there. That'd be depressing.
Because then, if one of us dies, I do believe, from the readings that I've acquired, that the entirety of the Hastur's curse befalls upon the living.
Have you established what the curse is yet?
Only that it's bad, and it's called a curse, and it's from Hastur, who generally doesn't play games.
That is true.
Very big on plays, though.
Yes. Have you found any evidence of what the curse actually is yet?
As far as I can tell, the curse happens to bring a malignant odor to the recipient. So, sorry to you. I guess I dodged that one. Let's see. It befalls gravely ill luck to whoever would disturb Hastur and his sleeping throne and such and such and such.
All right.
Yep. Take that as you will.
Oh, by the way, spider on your shirt.
What's that?
Excuse me.
My character tips over at the end of at the end of the plank and catches onto the ledge just at the end.
And I'm standing. I'm standing there in front of you, the temptation is so very strong right now. But just in case, grabbing your hand.
Okay.
All right.
There's one on your shoulder.
He'll
catch you. And catch you and like come along. That was a joke.
This goes on for about half an hour.
Finally, they are. Before them is produced a large wall of dusty hieroglyphics built into the otherwise prim and proper British architecture of the stone foundation.
Walk like an Egyptian. Described.
What?
Nothing.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Atonal pipings coming from one's body is actually part of the other. You understand.
Understood.
So it says here, my research was very clear. It said, he, because it always says he, doesn't it? Notice that every single one of our writings assumes that a woman would never fall for this.
Well, this is Lovecraft Crider, so it sort of makes sense when you think about it.
I suppose so. I mean, if it was she who reads this, would burst out laughing. Unbelievable. Like, who'd fall for this? I can't believe it. Here we are, but I mean, come on, let's be honest. I mean, I went to Harvard School of Yale, and, I really should know better than this, but I mean, and you,
went to Yale School of Harvard.
Yeah, that's true. Go fighting Yaleys.
You read that half and says, he who reads this shall know that upon the verbation, verbation. That says verbation. Is that even a word?
Is it maybe verbatim?
My Sumerians are not exactly on top.
I'm pretty sure it's Venetian.
Venetian. Who reads the Venetians shall withstand a horrible icy glow? Glow. It can't say glow, can
glow.
It?
Glow.
Well, how would you
Is there like, a horrible glow?
And how would it be icy? I always imagine glowing as being rather warm and comforting. Alright, so glow. Okay, let's assume that there's a glow here. So, Venetian shall withstand a horrible icy glow upon, their crown and shoulders serpent. What? That's a serpent.
What?
Just a serpent. It sense like it would use a penis.
Did you hear that?
What?
Is
that the sound of your stupid penis?
The horse has come back.
Horrible winning. Horrible winning. I thought that was you.
No, that was definitely not me. And I slurred.
Perhaps there's some sort of air can that has punctured.
No, according to this, it's crown and shoulders serpent.
Well, I mean, what's about a crown and
serpents fall from trap?
Serpents fall, but with the shoulders and head of human beings, the size of babies.
Oh God, it was literal! It was literal! Why is it always literal?
So I set the scene as this bad or good, you guys. It's up to you.
All right.
Bad, yeah.
Bad?
Okay, so bad. Why is it always literal? Because you! Be British! And they both leap across the chasm with amazing alacrity and run screaming off into the night. All right, and I'm going to give this to Dan, because he played a great serpent person.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
Good job.
All right.
Wow.
Okay. Right, so ideally, we're going to start moving to... After the first round, you start moving towards your goals, but not necessarily.
No. All right.
Step one, establishing competence.
This is a Fandible game.
Now, did I hear it right? Establish incompetence, right?
Yes. Yes. This is a Fandible game, after all.
Actually,
since we're doing something different, you guys establish for me.
Right.
So, I guess you get to say, but you have to stay outright. Do you have to say from the beginning whether you want this to be a good scene or a bad scene?
No, near the end.
You decide at the end.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Because
It could, just depending on how we play it out, it could end up being funnier.
Gotcha.
We could start the scene where you are now sitting at the Kit Kat bar.
Mm-hmm.
Club, covered
in, for help.
covered in like bandages and scale marks from where they slithered.
Scale burns.
And, you are nursing a beer in front of your friend, Ernest Young, explaining your luck in life.
Mm-hmm. He didn't really had to read. He didn't have to read the hieroglyphics. I mean, maybe they wouldn't have come out if the hieroglyphics weren't read. No, but no, we had demon snake babies. Just falling down upon my head.
No.
Fifth time this happened in a month.
No.
First it was badger babies. Then it was puppy babies. Which is, you think it's cute, but no, it's half puppy, half baby. And then snake babies.
The problem was you never knew which half.
No. It was both ends. It was weird.
That's just babies.
It was just babies all the way down.
Puppy babies are babies and puppies and twice the poop.
I was just swimming.
Then there were baby babies. Both asses. Both asses. Ass of a baby on top of an ass of a baby.
What was your character name? Sorry.
Ernest.
Ernest DeMore. I begin to think that Hass's curse is fake and the curse is actually trying to look for a way to unlock this curse. Because every time it just seems to get worse. I'm going mad here.
This is maybe the alcohol talking, so.
Probably is. Another vodka over here, please. Thank you.
Whatever you say, Governor!
I'm not entirely sure why you're still friends with this guy, because every time you go out, you're single-handedly putting all the doctors in London through medical...
It's not that we're friends. It's not that we're even acquaintances. Mm-hmm. It's just that we both have a link. We are both cursed by Hasta for things we may or may have done. I mean, I read a book. What's wrong with reading a book? And I may have stolen the book and may have awoken an undead evil. Doesn't matter.
See, that's why I just don't read.
No,
I don't never touch this stuff myself.
No, just it's honestly the things I've seen.
That's bartender, leave the bottle.
Yes, please.
Whatever you say, Governor.
On his tab.
Yes.
Have you always had scales?
Darling, that is glittering. And here you go. Don't worry about this so-called curse. Enjoy your vodka.
Thank you. Is this on fire?
No. It just looks that way. Because you're drunk. drink. Down it goes.
That's weird. I'm sorry. This is a Zima. My bad.
No! Oh, it burns like burning. Burning bird. Go!
Here's the real vodka bottle. Now, if you excuse me, I got to get going. I'm right be with you, darlings.
Oh, God, this day can't get any worse.
No, I'm pretty sure it can. It's just, you said it's not even 11 p.m. The day can get plenty worse. Trust me on that. See, I don't even know what that is, but that's probably bad news.
Jeremiah, get back down. Just go away.
It can get worse, Paul.
See, it's old.
From behind the two drunkards, there's an old, craggy man sitting alone at one of the tables against the wall. Long, spindly fingers and oily gray hair droop down from a skin and bones frame. He's dressed in respectable clothes for a man decades prior, and he's nursing a bottle of brandy.
Old man, I've had the worst day. I don't need your drunken ramblings right now.
Yeah, he's got plenty of drunken ramblings right here, let me tell you.
No drunken ramblings from me, Vios. No, I've heard something like this before.
Oh, have you now? Tell us your infinite old man wisdom. What have you heard similar?
I've heard that the king in yellow sits atop a throne at the plateau of Lang.
Harrow slowly turns towards the old man. What would you know of the king of yellow, old man?
I see winds that seem to glow.
Oh.
Whip across the tundra, flaying a man from his very soul.
I've heard those passages myself before.
Would you like to know more, Boyos? Specifically. Not just how you can get out of the current predicament you find yourselves in, but how you can make some top sterling doing it.
Now you got my attention. I was going to say, kings sit on thrones. It's what they do. Mm-hmm. It's what they do.
All right. He's just pulling a white tie.
Okay.
Thing is, it takes two to tango, as they say. It might not actually be a time-wise appropriate term, but... And it sounds like you need a partner you can trust. And he points a craggy finger at Daniel's character. And who's, you...
Who's just sipping out of a...
It's a midget. Imagine being able to pay for your own drinks. Hey, son.
That's a dream.
What's your name?
Ernest Young.
Ernest Young.
Yep. I've Instead been neither for about 30 years now.
Tell you what. Tell you what. You listen to what I've got to offer you, and both of you will have enough quid. Open up your own tavern. Drink all you like.
Oh.
Drink away all the memories.
And get rid of a certain affliction. Bless you.
Bless you, Mum. Even better.
Get all sorts of new afflictions.
If I could choose where to cast the affliction, I might be appreciative of that.
Indeed. Right now, you're in for a penny and for a pound. Uh-huh. What if you just gave a penny and a pound to one poor bugger?
I can think of one person that deserves it.
Sit down, blokes. I'm going to tell you a story.
All right.
And I am giving this to Dan.
You get all the dice.
Yep. Who plays a drunk soul?
I'm not playing, guys. This ain't lemonade. Yeah,
he actually has a problem, and...
We're all here. We're actually... Dan, this isn't recorded.
Actually, a convention.
Yeah. This is a fandivention.
But enough of that. Let's drink more and play games. Okay. Daniel, it is now... Oh, wait. Yeah, now it's Daniel.
Yeah, it is, in fact, my turn.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to establish?
Let's see. It's a... we have locations. All right. So, going to go ahead and establish a scene.
I love it.
And you guys...
Yeah,
jump in as needed.
Totally fuck you over.
Basically. Okay, so Roger. It's about 3 hours later that same night, and scene faded to black. Previously on mysterious stranger giving us information.
Mm-hmm. Not so much fade to black as you just passed out.
That's what I call it.
Wake up in a gutter somewhere.
Fade to black.
Yeah. That's what you say right before you pass out on the table. And scene.
I'm going to start using that in real life. And scene. So, a few hours later, And Ernest comes to. Mm-hmm. He sees he's not. This isn't the Kit Kat Club. And he seems to be in the middle of a field. Foggy at night. He can't really see very far in any direction. He sort of starts sitting up. Not quite hangover level yet. Still mostly drunk. I should fix that. Back to fully drunk. So, where am I? Please.
Where am I?
Hello? Harold? Anyone?
Not so. Click.
The horse!
Let's all do an indescript whispering on three. One, two, three. Fair enough.
Who's there? Who's? Hello?
A light fog travels over the landscape.
Okay. And in the darkness is sights unseen and unseen sights.
But am I actually hearing
that? Oh, yeah, you're hearing that. Okay.
I was going to say, like, if I'm actually hearing that voice, I...
Yeah, you're actually hearing this voice.
Harold, that doesn't sound like you. It just starts stumbling in that direction through the fog.
Follow for wisdom. Or your damnation.
No, what? Damnation? No, I just want to drink.
Fine, then there's drink. There's
whisper. Oh, wait, no, in that case. Okay,
this way. Moving spirits.
Open bar!
Yeah, so she starts stumbling off suddenly, like, trips and falls.
Mm-hmm. Into a pit. And he lands with a thump!
Yep.
From a fall that seems longer, but the fall is not soft earth. It is wood. And both of his shoulders are boxed in as they scrape wood walls together, and he lands with a crunch on his nose.
Oh my! Ow! Oh, is there a lot more of those over?
Without noticing, Ernest looks around and rolls over and realizes he's lying in a wooden box, and unbeknownst to him, directly behind his head, his blood from his nose pools into a spiral and disappears into the wood.
Here is the wisdom you seek.
And the light from a starry sky piercing through the mist is covered over by the lid of a wooden casket. And he is slowly lowered down by ropes unseen.
And
scene.
So I'm going to say that was a good ending.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a bad ending. Yeah. So you get to give that away now.
Let's see. I'm going to go with... I'm going to give this one to Billy.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Because of whisperings.
And ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da.
That was amazing. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to choose to resolve the scene.
Okay. like you've resolved the last one so well with cats and ghost horses.
Hey, it was white dice, wasn't it?
That's true.
That's true.
That's a good point.
Any scene that ends with a white dice, guys.
Yep.
All right, so, kids, what do we want to do? Angela's had it easy. She's been pretending to be a pretender the entire game. We can't let this happen.
She's, dead. No. She is currently counting the money that she's earned from her ill-gotten gains in her shop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she begins hearing scraping along the walls.
I'm dividing the money up between, you know, my portion of the share and Fitz's portion of the share. One for me, one for you.
Okay.
Two for me, one for you. Fitz? The cats can go away now.
The scratching stops, and there's a rustling in the walls. Something smaller.
Fitz, I told you to call the exterminator. Fitz, where are you? And I stand up from the desk where Vera's been counting her money, her ill-gotten gains, and goes out to the main portion of the shop.
It's dark, almost empty. The only thing that really greets you right now is the moonbeams coming through the window as
the clocks ring 12, all in unison across. Bing, 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 bing.
And Vera does jump when the cuckoo clock goes off. Yep. Like, God damn it.
Yeah. And Vera jumps back into...
Oh, hey, oh. Yo, whoa, hey, it's me.
Where were you?
I was in the walls trying to get all the bugs out, like you said. I was trying to save money from the exterminator.
Well, good.
No, I found something.
What?
I pull the wallet out from the old man, has still the watch, and he's like, I was looking through all the money that he had, and he had no money in there, unfortunately. but I found this piece of parchment. It's like an invitation to something.
I take the parchment.
It says, to whom it may concern, the Silver Lodge would like to cordially invite you to...
Cordially
invite you.
Death.
The Silver Key Lodge would cordially invite you to a gentlemen's and ladies' gathering tomorrow night betwixt the hours of 1 and 3 at the following location. Proper attire is expected, as are proper gifts.
Sounds like we have a room full of new marks.
That's what I was just thinking.
I have chosen a white dice.
Okay. And so, yeah. That's it. You have
got our invitation.
You have a bunch of new marks. Okay. And as she, Vera looks at the paper, in front of the doorway where she stormed out from the room where she does most of her readings and she was counting her money with in there. Eugene looks over her shoulder and for a brief second thinks that the oil painting of Vera that is meant to make her seem regal and mysterious has changed ever so slightly of her left shoulder leaning pose to a straight on stern look to the painter.
Of course, Eugene just shakes his head thinking nothing of this as, another clock goes off, the cuckoo clock, pulling his attention away. It being, of course, a minute slow.
Yeah, exactly.
And when he looks back, he notices that the painting is just as it was.
Yeah. Shoulder, says, left shoulder forward. That's her good son.
Well, the only thing we have to worry about, of course, is getting proper attire. But don't worry. I have a guy. He can get us exactly what we need and, he can make us look respectable.
Fitz, we are respectable.
Be respectable, ma'am. Bong! Bong! Boom! Oh, you know, I'm tired of this experiment to prove that you can set time 15 minutes ahead. Are you telling me it's actually 1 o'clock? I'm late, doctor!
Run out my skateboard. Scene. All right. Awesome. All right. Okay.
Second go around.
So you still need to give that away.
Yes, and I am going to give it to David for his excellent invitation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
It's all right.
Nice. I'm going to smoke that shit.
Nice.
I'm going to put this in my pipe and smoke it, just like you're going to tell me to.
Yep.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Donnelly. Can I do that?
Yes.
All right, so Billy. Would you like to establish?
Okay. Yes, it is. Yes.
I would like to establish the scene.
Okay.
Right now, I mean, we are in a we are walking through the streets. Vera and Eugene moving past alleyways, unaware of the shadows that whisper and flicker as they pass, almost as if following the. Sorry. I was supposed to be a purr. Anyways, I totally misrepresented what my... This is why I only took 2 years of acting, because people didn't see my craft, really. Oh, here's the place. And they stop in front of an old bookshop, covered in dust. The windows have been boarded from somebody not being able to afford the repairs on a new window when it broke. Mm-hmm. He goes to the door. It's still nighttime, hardly a sight, a person on the street, and he knocks loudly on the door.
There are actually two doors. Once this establishment was co-owned. But due to a falling out of the two owners, there a division was built down the center of the bookstore, and two doors now face one another at an angle. Where it once read Rumworth and Green, it now reads Rumworth on the left and Green on the right.
My character, unaware which one to choose from, because he doesn't notice the sign, he just sighs and just knocks on both doors.
And at the same exact time, both doors swing open. He's like, yes? Oh.
Oh, it's you.
Yes.
The two with the marks.
I don't know where my accent went there.
Oh, it's you. The two. He looks at Green.
Oh, they need representation about those marks you found on your body.
I'm so sorry. Is it contagious? Did the doctor get back to you?
No. It is viral. Very viral.
What sort of virus is it?
Well, so the sex type kind.
I'll put it to you this way. He's been on three tours as Her Majesty's sailor.
Slap!
come in.
Professor, you're not a professor. No,
nope.
Call you professor because you're. I told you that my colleague here is. Oh, I'm sorry. I got this. Madame Vera Hughes of the dynasty of the Mystic Dynasty.
Madame,
how'd I do?
Wait, you're Madame Vera. Vera.
Yes.
Of the East End.
Of course.
Amazing. I didn't have to come looking for you. You came straight to me. This has to be a sign. Curse is finally lifting. Eugene.
Signs are what I work in. They are my trade.
What is it that you need? Come, please. Let me pour you a drink, Miss Fire.
Okay. Yeah. And as they pour in drinks and they go to the back room, you actually see, the camera zooms, this camera zooms through the wall, and there is a Harold with a cup in his hand, yep. Ear planted, just listening to the entire conversation.
Well, okay. Since I know this is completely secure.
Of course. We, I spare no expense.
Yeah, we happened to come across a wallet that contained an invitation of the highest caliber. I mean, this is to the Silver Light Club, I believe it's called. And it says that there's going to be a gathering of gentlemen and ladies of all sorts and makes. And Miss Vera here, she thinks that's going to be filled with marks.
Right, well, of course. I
slapped down the invitation, and what the professor, a man who has read quite a few enigmas wrapped in enigmas, he sees something that the two charlatans do not notice, is the stamp, the seal at the very bottom, is a face of, almost looks like a flower, but it's actually a face... like a human face with snakes slithering across its head, almost like tentacles. It's a sign.
Right. Well, going to...
Yes.
No, this is legit. Right. Well, it's interesting note about the Silver Lodge, is that, they're always trying to grow their ranks, So that's why it doesn't say you plus one. So it's just, you know, you and whomever. And the establishing fact here is that whomever attends with the person who bears this insignia may attend whatever sort of gathering. Though there's something else about the gathering that's slipping my mind, but this isn't on point. It's a trifling thing. I'm sure it's some sort of social delicacy thing that we'll figure
out
just by
walking. Barely hear. God damn it!
So this is what I would propose. I find this absolutely fascinating, and I'm sure you'll find your friend Mark there. I would like to join you. And in doing so, I will provide us with the appropriate attire, and I know a smelter who can make us the appropriate signet ring with this very lovely little insignia.
I told you, madam, he's a genius. I've been stealing for him for years. I've been taking from him for years. Now let's go back to stage. I've been stealing for him for years. It's a give and take relationship to the infinite degree. You're very lucky that you know me. Trust me.
Vera swirls her brandy that Jeremiah was nice enough to pour, and she takes a long drink, considering everything. She sets it back down. You serve quite excellent libations, Master Rumsworth.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot coming from a person of such established pedigree as yourself. But listen, the most important thing is that you do not tell anyone where the location is, because it's secret. Now, this location, remember, no one out of earshot may know where this location is. We're going to 518 Piccadilly Circus, just off of Baker Street.
Ha!
That's 518 Baker Street, Piccadilly Circus, intersection. British people listening who know I'm fucking this up, I don't care. Do you hear me, Margaret?
The way you can remember that is 518 Baker Street. That's what I'm thinking. Yes, at a circus. Piccadilly Circus.
Absolutely. Now remember.
So 518.
I'm really glad this is the third time. I wasn't sure the first two.
I'm going to give you, and it camera swings around to Jesus' character listening with the glass.
Now remember, we're all going to meet in matching gray cloaks that I'm going to give you from this trunk in the back of my store.
The one with the golden handle on it?
That's correct. Normally, I would lock this. However, in case one of ours gets damaged, we need to be able to acquire another post-haste. So I will leave it unlocked here.
But how do we get into your building? Oh, that's right. You leave the key right under the mat outside.
Absolutely. The one that says, God bless this house. The irony should not be lost on any of us.
I think that's white.
I think it's the white for Jesus.
It's whoever you want to give it to.
So, two rounds.
Actually, it could be argued black because now we're going to have two other characters.
Oh, that's true.
Yep. Coming along that are not part of the plan.
Because I thought that was funny. Yeah.
Alright.
I fucking love this game.
Alright. We are going to jump right ahead to the Silver Lodge. I can't remember what it is in Lovecraft. It's Silver Gate Lodge, Silver Key Lodge, something like that. We're just going to call it the Silver Lodge. The meeting, it's at a grandiose Victorian brownstone in the middle of London. The steps are, actually the entrance is not up the glorious granite steps, but instead it is around back in a doorway that leads to a subterranean tunnel. An old, old subterranean tunnel.
The door is like solid. It's solid, solid. It's like steel. Like yeah, metal. Exactly. It's got a little bar at the top.
And when, yeah.
Are you three arriving?
Yes, we are. We are three arriving and knocking. Like, we are clothed in, gray cloaks.
And a little bar near the middle goes, and like a pair of bloodshot eyes, just like yes,
we're here. My character holds up the piece of paper, shaking. We're here for the meeting,
gathering.
Yes, the gathering, gathering. That was the word, not the meeting. Gathering, meeting. So that's so pedestrian. We have cloaks.
Cloaks,
yeah. And gifts! We brought gifts.
Oh, yeah. I hold up, like, just, like, a wrapped gift, like a birthday
gift. Yeah, exactly. It's like Boxing Day.
Yeah, the eyes just, like, stare, like, with silence for, like, 10, 15 seconds.
What would Angela say?
I was gonna say, we have an invitation.
Okay, yeah, so the thing was about to, like, hear, like, shriek! Opens up again.
As it closes, it's only one eye of the man is illuminated, and for a second becomes serpentine as a slit. It's like an animal, and then opens back up to two human eyes again.
Invitation.
That's what we wanted.
I pluck it from the shaking hands of Rumsworth and slide it through.
Yeah, the guy like sort of leans back. You see a very large hand take it. Then closes again. There's like nothing for about 30 seconds.
I think
calm yourselves, gentlemen.
I'm fine. I've done plenty of things.
Does anyone fancy a kebab if we're going to wait a long time?
No. I'm good. I'm good. Clink, clink.
I keeps going for a while. They really need to just cover like oil. Exactly.
It, even once he's done opening it, it's still going.
That keeps going for a while.
And then I realize I'm stepping on a cat's tail. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just, oh, jeez.
It just looks at you. And this giant, like, bouncer of a man. So yeah. Like, and then he sort of, like, moves aside like a door opening.
And we walk
in. Yeah, we walk in. You in a long hallway, torches every 10 feet or so, off into the distance.
All right. And we are led into... What kind of room are we letting to people?
It's almost, at first, as we go deeper down this, like, twirling staircase of stone and muck, we get to a lone gate that's just made of flimsy wood, and almost, like, the smell of this room is almost unbearable. Clearly the sewers, and as we open up the door, light suddenly hits us, and it's an elegant, elegant room filled with,
It's a dining room.
A dining room filled with beautiful...
A long, long maple table fills the center of the room. There's, in silver urns, are centerpieces every couple of feet.
Dusty.
Filled with dark purple and dark red lilies and roses.
Very lovely. Very lovely. Nice.
Yeah, and as you're seeing the room... Camera cuts back a moment to that door that's slowly being closed again. The doorman is like, you know, like, oh, Christ, it ain't. And it's about to close.
Okay. A hand slowly stops the door. And before them, the doorman sees Harold in his gray cloak. Well, he got the idea from someplace. But right next to him is another individual. Strange, almost hunchback individual. Old man.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yes, I have an invitation.
Invitation?
I pass you the invitation. Thank you. Thank you kindly. Good sir. And this is my plus Warren. What was your name again?
Smith.
Smith. Father. Yes, it is Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And Harold and Smith go down the same corridor into the dining room.
All right.
And the door opens up. And Harold looks around trying to find something familiar and sees...
Unfortunately, everyone has their hoods up.
Oh, that is true.
So you see
a room full of gray cloaks.
Yes. Yep. And Harold just looks around. Like,
Vivaldi's Spring is playing because that's what all rich people, regardless of cult ties...
And as he goes through the door, he goes to Smith. Again, I'm sorry to put you in on this. I mean, I usually have you Ernest here, but he's just... I think he's probably drunk again. Well, of course he's drunk. He's always drunk, but...
That's all right.
Ladies and gentlemen, a man, a gaunt figure, giant with sunken in cheeks, walks in. The hors d'oeuvres are served.
Oh,
and slowly but surely, a group of these people are wearing red cloaks, walk in, carrying... It's a coffin, and on its side are actually cups, like, bolted onto it, filled with things like crackers and cheeses of variety. Mm-hmm. And they move to the dining table, and kung! Whatever's in that coffin weighs a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have an entire pig in there.
And right now, the smell of cheeses and wine fills the air, and
mingled with the scent of damp dirt.
Yes. That is in one of the other cups. Don't, Eugene, unfortunately, butters a cracker of dirt. Says, oh, man, the caveat sucks here.
Everyone stops and looks at Eugene. The music stops for a second. Just faceless cloaks turn and look at you. And one old hand goes to a faceless cloak and goes, and then motions at the people in red. The people in red all hold out one hand and take a small blade. And cut their palm over the cheeses and crackers, which they then kind of, in a left-to-right motion, douse the entire area in, squeeze their palm, and then file out. And then music starts back up, and like a horde of ants, all of the gray-cloaked people, relieved that it's finally done, goes, let's get a good some onomatopoeia on three. One, two, three.
Save the queen.
All right, yeah, and they just start digging in with its sloppy, wet sound of people who should know better having no manners.
Yeah, I held the half-eaten cracker, then I'm like, I'm saving this for later.
And it becomes obvious, though, that there's this, that almost all the gray clothes surround that coffin, leaving 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 individuals standing a little farther apart, able to notice each other.
Smith does not wait.
Hmm? Oh, Smith. Okay,
dives right in.
Okay. Yep. Oh, that's. And Harold slowly turns towards his right, towards a very familiar face.
So is this a good or bad ending for me, kids?
This is a good ending. Nothing bad happened. We weren't found.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'll grab that and then I'll give it to somebody in a second. Green.
Harold.
I'm sorry.
What have they done to you?
Jeremiah. Yes. What are you doing here?
I could ask you the same thing.
I was invited.
I don't know where you... And then, off in the distance, one of the people in red slaps two bloodied hands together, spraying blood over, like, the nearby diners who don't even notice it lands and soaks into their gray cloak, and from beneath the cowl says in an almost a strange voice,
visiting hours for the domes will begin in 10 minutes. Have your dedications ready.
You thought my animal sounds were bad.
Mm-hmm. Right, and as the door swings open, as the red person leaves, almost floating out of the room backwards, there are a display of books behind rope and glass, of which read The King in Yellow, Nameless Cults, and The Necronomicon. Yep. All right.
Well, all right.
All right, so who gets the white?
Gonna give that to Jesus.
Oh, thank you.
We're totally fucking with my shit there. Okay. Now, you don't... Moving forward, we don't always have to do something that takes place in the temporal line.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You can do a flashback of anything. You can cut ahead if you really want to fuck with everybody. just as a heads up.
Okay. Actually, you guys establish me. I can't think of anything later.
Alright, I'm going to say that this is a flashback to the first tome that Harold Green ever came across to call his own. Where he first started the business of what was then Rumworth and Green.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be the book that made it, in fact, Green and Rumworth.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it by himself, striking out into... Where did he strike out into? What forbidding area of the planet did he find this first?
The dark depths of Africa.
Okay. That's a small area.
All right.
How about in the bowels of an Egyptian pyramid?
That works too.
All right. Days after a ne'er-do-well professor and his companions disappeared in the same place. All right. A young Harold Green is climbing down a hemp rope that has been thrown down a large cavernous area into complete darkness. He has thrown two torches that have landed with a dry thunk on the tomb floor. And he, and only he, young arms lowering himself down, drops in khaki explorer gear and lights a third torch and looks around. In front of him, he sees boxes that once held, or that do hold, the once living bodies of ancient servants for the regal individual whom this tomb was built for, and he looks around for the signal that the scrolls spoke of, that would lead him to a copy of the Cult de Ghouls, a very rare text that will fetch him a supreme amount of money. What is this? What is this? Daniel, do you have something you want to tell the class? Daniel is live tweeting this.
No. I should be, actually, but no.
David is pulling out all of his Lovecraft references in one fell swoop.
Yep.
One all at once.
Yep. Looking around for something, he's looking around for something subtle. He's checking every edge of every tome of every, tomb of every, of the top of every sarcophagi. He's blowing dust off and reading the Egyptian and then reforming the Egyptian in his mind. Maybe there's some sort of hidden meaning as he steps back, trying to take in the grandiose nature of the entire place. He slips and bumps his head.
No! Oh!
And he rolls over and he notices that someone has carved a giant arrow into the center of the cement or of the stone that makes the tomb.
The hell? And Harold follows the arrow.
As Harold moves forward, still smarting his slightly bumped head, he doesn't notice that the blood on the tomb floor that came from the fall slowly goes into a spiral and disappears into the
spiraling blood. What the hell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what would you rather? It stays there and someone has to clean that up?
That's what they're paid for.
No. Yeah, that's what all of these servants were just for blood cleaning.
No, yeah. So much blood.
The things well, they had the red cloaks for.
Yeah. Oh. Ah. They were gray.
They were gray. At one point.
Yeah. Ew.
You don't know what the brown cloaks are for.
Poo boomer.
Alright, moving forward into a grand cavern. The intrepid explorer, Harold Green, finds a small doorway, half his size, with a small insignia on it, the same insignia of the hieroglyph that was prominently displayed in the text that he decoded in order to find this location.
Harold, on his hands and knees, crawls through the hole and sees before him
Not much, because it is dark, and he cannot bring his torch in with him, lest he burn himself. Uh-huh. And so, leaving it behind, planning to turn around, he crawls through the very lip of the opening, and then turning around to get his torch, notices that his back foot catches nothing, and he begins to tumble backwards into a slide. A smooth, circular chute that takes him away into the embrace of the darkness. He goes for what seems like an eternity. Boom! Lands in a dry crumple of bones. Piles and piles. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Anna Angela, take it away. Hollow Earth.
And lava is coming down that tube behind you.
And you hear the distance.
Wait. You're telling me we don't know where the sarcophagus is. That's inside humor. You don't get it.
Yeah, I don't. And surrounded by dried bones, Harold stands up and says, I think this has been done before.
Yeah, Harold notices that there are the dried dressings of modern day explorers reaching all the way back for a couple of decades at least, littering the area. And in front of him, there is an ethereal glow.
Harold steps towards the glow. Close enough to touch.
It is a small, what looks like crystal encasement, obscuring whatever lies inside, it's about red. The size of a football.
Red.
Okay. You're picking a black die?
Yeah.
Okay. As you reach for the crystal, your hand suddenly connects and it just begins to just shatter, crack around the edges, and that crystal crumbles away, revealing a book. A book that later on in your life you would recognize behind those glasses and that banquet. A book that almost defines you as you reach for it, knowing that this is the start of your legacy. You suddenly feel a club hit the back of your head. And you, through blurred vision, you stumble forward. Someone reaches out, grabs the book, a lone page drifting down, hitting your arm, and as you turn away, as the person just slowly begins walking away, you turn and through glassy eyes make out the visage of someone with brown hair, stubble, wearing just an adventurer's outfit like you, Eugene Winkle.
Oh, one day I knew this day would come.
All right. And scene. All right. So that was your first, that
and you
was
were
your
young
first
man
foray.
Right there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Yeah. So that was your first foray. Okay. Who do you want to give that?
Definitely you for the description.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay.
I think.
What question? How old is your character?
We're on the second round now, right? Yeah.
How many does everybody have?
Yeah, my character is.
I've got two dice.
20 at best.
Okay, so that. All right, just wanted to establish that weird fact.
All right. Who did you hand that to?
I handed it to you.
Okay, thank you. How many dice do we have on the table right now? How many dice do we have?
No, this is the second go around.
Okay, this is the second go around.
Once we got me and her, then I think that's
not yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Solid. All right. Solid. Okay.
And speaking of me, last we heard of our intrepid drunkard, he was in a box.
Uh-huh.
You're going to hold him in, you dick in a box.
You want to establish or resolve?
I'm going to go ahead and resolve because I have no idea where we're going with
okay.
this.
Okay. So. I would say that as the drunkard is lowered into the box, perturbed, but not entirely terrified. Because
not the first time I've been thrown out of worse places than this, but better people than you.
Indeed. He takes his small matchbook, lights a match to get an idea of his surroundings. Part of his reptile brain says, "You're in a goddamn coffin, genius." But the rest of his brain is saying, "You're no genius. You don't know.
You don't know me. You can't judge me.
Shut up, subconscious. You just get in the way now.
Respect a man on his funeral. Respect a dad, you son of a bitch. Oh, wow.
Ernest, get your wits together. Let's put 2 and 5 together. You're in a box.
As he
it's made of wood.
As he looks around at the box made of wood with his match, as we would know in the modern day, eating precious minutes of oxygen with every second. He notices that the inside of the wooden box is actually carved in an indescribable language. Something.
Something carved here. I can't quite describe it, though.
As he touches it with his fingers, though, he knows...
Blood spirals.
Exactly. And he's dead. No. He knows, though, that he feels that this is part of something larger. And he doesn't feel afraid. And he knows that he needs to break out of the coffin now, that he's absorbed what he needs to absorb. He has learned what he needs to learn. He has discerned what... Ah, fuck, this match is hot! And so we cut to the muffled cries. We cut to now a rain-soaked soil that covers the place where the coffin was lowered into. And the muffled yells of an irate Ernest as he's punching his way out of the very earth. Irate muffles. And
this earth tastes worse than the slap this earth at the club.
And surging through the top of the soil comes a soot and filth covered Ernest onto a rain-strewn cemetery. Cemetery lot. How he could not have noticed that he was in a cemetery lot is difficult at best.
Really? One of the he many really mysteries.
Yeah, it's true.
And the many mysteries that I will shock up forever to alcohol. Alcohol, your mysteries are myriad and many.
Speaking of alcohol, he hears the sound of clinking glasses and laughter and the faint whiff of brandy and what smells like a coppery scent, but he can't really quite make it out. And there is a light.
There's a light.
Okay. Off in the distance through the cemetery.
Ah, my keen senses indicate this is the direction I should be headed into. Hello?
He raises his hand and realizes that he's actually quite nude. He was clothed when he went into the...
You've been in this predicament. Many times.
Walking by, he notices that someone has left some crumpled clothes, some what he can only assume is some randy grave robbers, left some crumpled clothes. It looks like a kind of a bathrobe.
Aha.
Yeah.
There we go. This This'll do just fine. That reminds me of the good old days of my youth. That don't say no. Starts putting on the robe.
It is a
perfect fit.
Yep, it is a perfect fit, and it is a perfect crimson color.
Yes.
as he moves forward to the. Did you pull a die?
Not yet.
This is what would you like, good or bad?
So the last one I specifically went with bad, so this time I'm going to give myself a good one.
Okay, great. He notices that in the satchel of the red robe is a small flask with a strange insignia of a silver key on the top.
Put up the flask, and it's like real silver and everything. And tries to bite it.
Yep. Whole thing is silver.
It's coming up, Ernest.
Yeah. As he sips from it, crack of lightning across the heavens as the downpour intensifies, and he hears more whispering.
That's a good vintage run.
And he stumbles.
Saving this for later.
He stumbles forward to his destination as he is led into an open door by an equally robed figure.
Yeah, it all feels like natural.
Exactly. And he walks right in.
Yep.
And all right, and we can close that scene.
Mm-hmm. So, good day to... I give that one to David, because, you know, my main narrator there.
Yeah. Yay.
David collects all the dice.
Yes.
Yeah, he does. Yay. All right, last scene before the tilt.
Vera. Okay. It feels like we should definitely be back inside the club or the lodge before the tilt. Seems like we should establish that shit is about to go to hell in a handbasket. So we go back to Harold, Jeremiah, Eugene, and Vera in the dining room. The 10 minutes have passed, and the foursome of outsiders still aren't quite sure what the dedications are supposed to be, but Vera is a master of deception, and so she's not terribly bothered by it. She's been in worse pickles than this one.
This is not the first time that she has totally crashed a party.
Totally not.
No. Although only a cult party twice.
It's true. Huh?
The other parties did have a better dress code.
No, that's true.
Because this, the gray cloak. Mm.
Yeah, because she got to dress as Zatanna last time. Is it Zatanna? I don't know. I'm trying to make a DC joke. I don't read DC.
I don't think they were fishnets. Oh, no, they were fishnets in the 30s. Never mind.
Yeah,
really?
They were totally fishnets.
Yeah, fishnets.
It was a different time back then. More innocent.
No.
More fishnets. More
fishnets. Well, relatively speaking. Because then the 80s happened.
And that was all the fishnets.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know where fishnets are not big? In Smith. Anyways, God, that was such a bad joke.
Oh,
I'll leave.
For the best.
All right.
Dark dice for David.
Just, yeah.
Okay, so you've established. All right, and so people are lining up. They're putting down their small silver plates full of chewed on crackers and spattered blood with cheese. And someone pierces their eye.
No. Oh my god, the bus ads for the strain that are going
yes.
on.
Yeah.
Oh my
god. So good.
Yes.
I saw that and immediately thought of you. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. It's like if they just had a giant, it would be the equivalent if they just had a picture of a giant tarantula and then it just said, on your face.
It really is. They may as well just put like, fuck you, Angela. Yeah.
I've never watched like, that shit. It's yeah. like it could be a great show. Don't care. Your advertising sucks.
That's amazing. Yep. Do you think it ends with ocular, like, just, like, surgery every time?
It's the one theme on every show.
And you said there was a glass display case holding books.
Three glass display cases, and everyone is lining up in the glass display case. They are against the far wall, red velvet floors, and a dark blue wall with a silver trim. Surrounds all the cases, and the cases are lit up by various lighting, candelabras predominantly. Mm-hmm. And people are lining up, and there is a long trough. It seems like a trough in the black in front of all of the cases, and people are taking things out of their cloaks, bowing three times, and then dropping their object, you can't see what they are, into the trough with land with a sploosh of water, but it sinks to the bottom of the about 3-foot high trough. You can't see what it is. it remains pitch even in this well-lit area.
Fitz.
Yeah, love.
Go make your absolutions to one of the dedications.
Whatever you say, m'lady. Fitz walks towards it, his cloak still down low, and as he passes Harold, he kind of just does the side glance towards Harold, finally the cloak riding up just a bit. And you remember seeing him in the shadows last night, but just the way he's looking at you, the way it almost looks like he has that 5 o'clock shadow again, it drags that memory of the boy, the 20-year-old who stole the very book that you are seeing behind the display case. And as he passes him, he reaches into his cloak and pulls out, you guys don't see, and he just drops whatever it is deep into the trough, bowing his head. Very much like the mimic right now. He is pulling this off like the best of them. He even mumbles some of the words that are both terrifying and indescribable to you guys at the same time. And he just steps away and suddenly just back to being Eugene, looks towards Vera, gives her the thumbs up.
Yep. And anyone looking at Harold sees a look of shock on his face.
And
did you see what the others were dedicating?
He moves back towards Vera and he says... Yeah. It's, it looked like they were dropping, like, coins. Must be at least 100 quid in there.
Bless you.
But it was like all, they looked stained in something.
A delight, I'm sure. Vera reaches into a fold in her dress below her cloak, pulls out, a handful of coins. And thinking back to the what happened at dinner, she asks, excuse me, Fitz, do you have a pocket knife on you?
Yeah, it's right here. Do you need it?
If she takes it, and below her cloak, she slits her across her palm and wraps her fingers around the bloody the coins that are now covered in blood, and she goes in front of the display case with the Necronomicon, looking just like... If it had eyes, which I guess it does sometimes, she would, just be maintaining eye contact with it. She's obviously very, very interested in this display case, and she's kind of, she's casing the joint, as Fitz can see, as she, mutters a little bit under her breath and drops her coins into the trough.
There's a splash of water as the... louder than the coins should be. And as she casually looks away and tries to give a smile to Fritz, something grasps her hand, and she looks down, and there is an image of Fitz, covered from head to toe in a black ichor ink, reeking of the sea and dead
ink
fish.
Ink monster!
White eyes fevered as he smiles with white teeth and red lips and pulls her close and says, "Run!" And in a moment, there's a, as one of the people in red claps and says,
"Second hors d'oeuvres are ready."
Jesus, as the clap takes place, you look back towards Fitz, not kind of still freaking out about that image, and you see that pocket knife that she used to cut her hand. Fitz has moved it very carefully and wrapped it in a he didn't even close the blade. He just wraps the blade in a black kerchief and just slips it back into his pocket. And there's a wry smile on his lips before he evens it out.
Okay. Vera looks down and there's nothing after the clap.
Yeah.
She is just holding a bleeding hand over a black ichor of trough. All
right. And Harold looks upon, Eugene and thinks, wasn't the book that he was in the...
Cult de Ghouls is what he stole from me.
The ghoul book. The ghoul book.
Yes. But it's French, so it's so much cooler.
All right. And he looks at him, he's like, he's read the book.
Meanwhile, a door burst open. And in from the outside, as people shuffle back into the dining area, comes another red-cloaked figure.
So this was like sway slightly. It's still like cloak down. Immediately, anybody like within like nose shot, like gets the whiff of this alcohol. Sorry, I'm late. Sorry. Kind of looks around. Again, cloak is there. So.
earnest.
This way.
Did you pull a red or a, I'm sorry, a red or white?
I established, so.
Oh, that's right. Right. So I think this will go poorly.
All right.
For Vera.
All right.
Yeah, who's in over her head?
All right.
All right. So, yeah. So, Vera, here you go.
Hi.
And so, so the stinking drunk, friend of Harold's, kind of motions everyone, into the dining area. And as they do, there is a, flickering of the candelabras as they start to go out. And as all of, the people here, looking around, you notice that Smith is no longer there, Harold. Mm-hmm. The lights go out for a second, and the doorway that is illuminated with all of the revelers, there's blackness in the room that you're currently in. All of the revelers stop and twist a cloaked head towards you, and the door slams shut. Boom! All right.
Yeah.
And that's scene. Let's go on to the tilt. Let's nice. Take a 15-minute break.
Oh, yeah. I have to give away my dice. I'm going to give it to Billy for apparently conniving against his co-conspirator.
Nice. No problem. All right. Okay, so 15-minute break starts now.
And we're back from the 15-minute break, full of Doritos and hope.
Mostly Doritos.
Some of us did yoga. It was crazy, guys.
Mm-hmm. Cray cray.
Yeah, if we could have recorded that on video, we wouldn't have.
It would have been the boringest 15 minutes.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We would have seemed so... Well, first of all, I'm wearing a tank top right now, so it would have been blinding.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, you would have needed to... Everyone
at this table is wearing shades.
Yeah. Right. Racked up like a dude. Okay, damn it. No, another song.
is the line... Also, Line of Battle Light wrapped up like a douche? Is that I've always wondered what that line is. I don't know what
it's racked up like a deuce, another roller in the night. Because you're rolling snake eyes. Now, the only way I know this is because there used to be, tangent, there used to be in the 1990s a short-lived sketch comedy show called The Vacant Lot. And they had a sketch where a bunch of guys are sitting around a table playing poker, and one by one, they each try to sing that line. And they get so far away from it that eventually the climax comes from one of the guys freaking out and screaming at all of his friends. It's like, they come up, racked up like a loose, I'm gonna throw away the night, ratched up like caboose, you're gonna blow away a kite. I mean, like, they just get further and further. He freaks out. He's like, no! Wrong! 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 It's not caboose! It's not loose! It's not whatever the fuck you just said! It's racked up like a deuce, another roller in the night. It's about gambling! Ah! And he storms out. That is the only reason I know what that fucking lyric is.
I'm sticking with
like a douche. All right, racked up like a
douche. I always hear douche, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're staying with that, sorry.
That's the way things go.
There need to be more songs about douches.
Yeah.
There's plenty of songs by douches.
Yeah.
Not enough about. That's the problem.
I'm sure there's one douche song out there.
Well, yeah, it's Carly Simon, it's, You're So Vain.
And that Blinded by the Light one, apparently.
Yeah. Wrapped up like a douche. Yeah. I'm going to throw away the night.
There we go.
Because really, what else do you do with a douche? I mean, you tell me. Do we save them? Do you know? You don't have like a collection like you do with teeth?
Well, you actually you hang them from strings, and that's what you drag on your wedding day.
Oh, God.
You're welcome.
And that's the tilt right there.
Ed, should we just tell our fans to kind of what our tilt was?
Right. Oh, yeah.
No.
Do we keep our tilt to ourselves?
No. The tilt is public, like the locations and...
Betrayal of a friend. Betrayal from a friend is one of the thing, Majiggies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the other one is mayhem.
Dangerous animal, perhaps metaphorical, gets loose.
Perhaps unlikely.
Perhaps
I just want to say I'm very proud of Angela for being able to read my handwriting right there.
I took a pause before metaphorical.
Now, is this loose or footloose? Because it'll be a very different game.
Stop trying to shoehorn more songs into this episode.
Damn it! Footloose joke, though! Shoehorn, well played! Well played, Miss Kraft! Look at you! Look at you!
Well played, ma'am.
Now, if you guys would please... Yeah. Alright?
Alright.
Let's not don't drink each other's fudge. Let's get down to it. yes. I have such power. It's a trigger word for him.
Billy, since you started this whole shenanigans, would you like to start us off after the tilt?
Establish or resolve, good sir.
I'll establish. The music is playing in the chamber as they have called for second hors d'oeuvres. The drunken man, the drunken man has has waved people towards another chamber, I suppose.
That's what I do.
And slowly but surely, the people begin funneling out. And as our good friend Eugene walks by the pool, he pulls out the blade, still containing the blood, bloop, drops it in. And then the camera switches down to, like, the blade itself, like, from the blade's point of view, and it sinks deeper and deeper and deeper and darker and fades to black, and it goes back 40 or so years, 30 years. Eugene, slowly moving through the chamber, spotting someone in front of him, slamming a club in the back of his head, and taking the book, leaving but a page for the man to find, that he, whoever touched, read the page, was cursed. But cursed with what? He followed the man for years until he, of course, brought that page to his friend, Jeremiah. Cursed. Whoever read was cursed, but cursed with what?
Oh, Harold! Damn it.
Of course.
I didn't understand.
Was there ever really a curse? The window that was broken, that has been broken for years, was broken by a rock thrown by Eugene. The snakes that fell on them all were dumped by, the camera zooms up towards like a hole, Eugene crouching. Every one of these these misfortune has been done to you both by Eugene. And it all is summed up with the pool right there to get it all sums up to that night where he supposedly found the invitation. No, he plants the invitation into the wallet, walks over, invites Vera in order to get you two to follow him to the Silver Light Club, to get Vera's blade on that blade, blade, so he can drop it into the dark liquid, all because of that one scene, what happened 40 years ago, where after he walks away from Mr. Harold Green, him cutting his own wrist, palm, dropping it into the pool of blood, pool that he found in that pyramid. That dark reflection grabbing hold of his wrist and pulling him closer until they both suddenly switch places. And now, on this finest of nights, the ritual was ready to be complete. Two men with a rivalry built on lies and blood will be sacrificed by a liar who speaks false truths. And with a sly grin, Eugene spins on his heels as the bubbling of the pool begins to escalate, and he falls in line behind the gray cloaks, following into the next chamber, saying, "God, this is really exciting, guys. I don't know about you, but I'm having a really good time. Did you have any of those old dubs?"
Now, when we left the last scene, the door had swung closed.
Oh, I thought the chamber, that was the main door, I thought.
Mm-hmm. The main door where they were all eating food. Everyone looked towards the people. And so, as Eugene is wandering out, he is the last person to exit without the rest of the characters. As everyone looks back, Eugene also looks back somewhat timidly, like, "Oh, everyone else is doing it, what's behind me?" And then the door slammed closed. But before the door slams closed, leaving his perspective. Everybody okay with this? His perspective, not souvenirs. I'm sorry. People you kill ritualistically, sacrifices.
No.
Those Doritos, man. sacrifices in the room together with the bubbling cauldron, safe and secure until he is ready for them. I've pulled a white die and I'm giving it to Billy.
Nice.
All right. That's all Eugene's seen.
Okay.
I will... Oh, you want to establish?
No, it's you.
Okay. You motioned towards me, and I was like, yes!
I want to establish.
Actually, resolve, come to think of it. Who wants to do what? To me.
It's not confused. So Eugene got into the main room with the rest of them. So everyone else is in the...
Trapped in the room with the books.
Including a drunk guy.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Including your character.
Okay. Just making sure.
Sorry about that, people. I forgot about the closing door. So just a little retcon. That scene happened, and Eugene left with the cloaked figures, leaving these four to suffer with the closed door?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that would be like after the commercial break, it would show the exact same scene from Eugene's standpoint.
Okay.
And there is a...
Now you guys realize you are...
There is a clear correlation between Eugene... Now we have some idea of why the door suddenly slammed closed.
Right.
Okay. As treacherous Eugene crossed the threshold, ready for a second villainous round of finger cakes. Literally.
Mm-hmm. Real fingers.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So
who wants to set the scene for him?
Mm-hmm.
I will start with a sentence.
Okay. Oh boy.
The water, the dark water, continues to bubble. Its liquid finally reaching the very cusp, the edge of the pool itself before it begins bubbling over onto the stone floor.
Mm-hmm. Just like camp, everybody gets to go with one sentence.
Okay, we're doing it that way.
Fine. Jeremiah looks around. Has anyone noticed an ethereal glow from that which does not normally emit light, namely the bubbling substance from the trough?
I was under the impression that might have been you.
Nope. Certainly not me.
That's fantastic.
Open this door. open this door now.
You guys notice that one of the red-hooded creature people still near the door, sort of like looking at it confused.
All right.
What are you... You're there in red. You. In red. You work here.
Pulls back his hood and it's Ernest.
Ernest! Oh, Ernest, you're alive! Hey, where have you been? I've been looking everywhere for you.
I've just been, you know how it is, boxes and falling. You know, it's
Are you still drunk?
No, wait, that reminds me. That's thanks, dude, man. Pulls out the little, flask full of,
something.
Wisdom.
Yep.
Of wisdom and courage. Ha ha! Okay, just the thing. Just the thing.
The old man points a crooked hand from his cloak. Where'd you get that?
Where does anybody else get them from? The pockets of cloaks?
It was supposed to be buried underneath the grave. Yeah. It was me secret stash.
Is what the location card said, and full circle.
Yay.
It's not a secret now, is it?
No, not to your lips! Not to your lips! No! And there is a bright flash of light from the eyes of the drunkard, illuminating the entire room, and the black bubbling substance in one convulsing move recedes with a and goes back into the trough. For a brief second, it looked like it wasn't flowing like a normal liquid. It was actually crawling with thousands of baby arms towards our intrepid explorers with black ligaments and inky fingers. As it rescends back in there, the light illuminates all of the surrounding areas, and cracks appear in the glass cases surrounding the three ancient and really expensive tomes. And they shatter with a glorious sound and bright flashing light. And as the drunk looks around, confused, shooting light out of his eyes like Cyclops, yeah.
Bright, that's good vintage!
Bright light. After... With every sweep of his eyes, wherever the bright beam of light touches, that part of the person disappears.
Whoa.
So it sweeps over Vera's torso. Vera's torso is gone. And it sweeps, and there's a scream! And he says,
ah!
He looks back at Vera, and the rest of Vera disappears. Ah! And he looks at the rest of us, confused and asking for help.
That's not the first time I look at a woman and she yells away. He turns back like, help! Ah!
Ah! Ah! Ah!
All right.
And I think that's a bad ending. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yep. So I'm going to take a bad ending as everybody is swept away somewhere else with the light of the eyes of a drunkard, just like in Revelations.
Yes.
Glowing, just glowing.
Yeah.
All right.
Super whiskey. That's always an answer in my stories.
All right. It's black for quite a while.
Serious option?
Yep.
Okay.
Right. It's black.
So it is a Lovecraft story.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we haven't established that something bad is happening.
Okay.
Sure. I'm going to establish something bad is happening. It is pitch black. No noise in the background. And an unconscious Harold gains consciousness and slowly opens his eyes into a very, very familiar room. A room he was in 20 years ago. Rumors him where some bastard knocked him out and took his prize.
MB.
And as he's grabbing his head, he starts seeing familiar shapes around him. A rival, a drunkard, and some woman he doesn't really know. But for some odd reason, someone is missing. The one he really wants. Does anyone know what the hell just happened?
So we're in the tomb where you got knocked
out? Yep.
Love it.
Because pain.
I'm alive? I'm alive?
Of course you're alive.
Oh, don't sound... Oh, you were as a cucumber and you didn't know what was going on either.
I turned partially invisible and then I remember passing out and then I woke up here and... What the hell's going on?
The old man, he's gone.
I know this chamber. This is Jeremiah, this is where I got the book.
This is where you got the book.
The page. The book was taken from me here.
This is where you got
by your bastard. Well, not. I don't mean I meant the guy was a bastard. I didn't mean he was your bastard.
Know exactly what the lineage of his person is.
Okay, the jerk that was with you.
Better.
He took it from me. He took it from me. 20 years ago.
From a corner, yelling, comes Ernest's voice.
Yeah.
I was out of the way with the ladies, that one.
No.
As you look, he's managed to tear a little bit of his robe up, and he's like wrapped it around his eyes. As far as he's concerned, he's like Cyclops.
He looks like Zatoichi. It's amazing.
Who is he? The one with you. What was his name?
Oh, he's no one important whatsoever.
Stop! Not now, man! Not now! Who is he?
His name is Fitz.
Fitz, whatever his name is. Actually, would I have known your name? Would you just... Okay. I've seen him before. In this very chamber. 20 years ago, he took the book from me and left the page.
It's impossible. That'd make him much older than the rest of us. The man's a strapping young lad.
We were teleported across countries.
Totally irrelevant.
By the way, we have your word, the word of a raving lunatic, as far as I'm concerned, to establish that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please explain how we were transported into ancient Egypt. Or Egypt.
Vera looks around at what is at the chamber, which is all interior, mm-hmm. has no windows to establish location. We have no GPS. So she's just like, we have been in a mansion with many imperceivable, unknowable artifacts. There's no proof that we aren't simply in its basement.
Ah, she's got you there.
Indeed, there could have been some sort of trap door, and there's a bright light, we're all disoriented,
I
and then
know
the charlatans
this
run that
chamber.
Place.
Yeah, that's how it was. It certainly wasn't any,
fine, then exactly where are we then? How did we get here?
Your memory says a very familiar voice.
What the?
And coming out of almost the shadows, covered in filth and grime, eyes of white, teeth of white, is,
you established.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, yeah. So you guys choose for me, so never mind.
Might look like
that's
Eugene.
A good ending.
Okay.
Angela, you recognize him as the person that grabbed your arm. Your memory, sir.
What?
Your memory
a ritual needs to be complete. It needs to be set up. I did not realize that before it took me. Took my form, took my life. Shoved me within this dark void.
What is it?
The book. You look at book a book as nothing more than just words on paper. You sell it like currency, but it's more than that. The book itself is knowledge, and knowledge itself makes up a creature that is far, far more powerful than any of you.
See, I told you. That's why I never touch the stuff myself.
Words of a wise man. All right.
So welcome
to
your hell. For soon enough, that book will have all your bodies and flesh puppeting around until the Dark Lord comes.
Well, that's just fine.
And slowly but surely, just like, almost like he's pressing himself against the cracks of the wall, he pushes himself back in until he's like completely just, almost like Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Predator, just filthed. And kind of cloaks in again, he just closes his eyes and rests.
And I point at the liquid corpse and look upon Vera and be like, eh? Eh?
Well, luckily, Vera happens to be an extremely established psychic and medium. So clearly,
she
if
is?
Anyone, you've never heard of the established Vera Wang, Vera Hughes.
You're Vera Hughes! Oh, my apologies. I am so sorry.
I didn't want to say anything.
I know, I've been under a lot of pressure. A
lot of pressure.
Yes, right. You know what I mean?
Noted.
Yeah, so, you know, but...
What do the spirits say, Vera? How can we get out of this?
Our lives depend on you.
Now, I understand that Eugene has his reservations about your unbelievable grasp of the supernatural. But as for the rest of us who deal in this sort of thing daily, minutely, as it were, we know the real McCoy when we see it.
The things we've seen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, that's astonishing. So, Vera, we need you to perform a seance and sensitively find whatever it is that can get us out of this. Yes, a black dye. Something goes wrong. Something goes horribly wrong. All right.
And Vera, well, we'll cut right after this, but Vera begins to arrange the group in a circle as the spirits require us to sit on the dust and the grime of the ancient tomb and take hands. Mm-hmm.
All right. As we take hands, I can't see your character from here. So Ernest.
Yeah, Ernest.
Sorry, Ernest, yeah. Daniel's character. As somebody reaches for his right hand, gives a one moment motion, digs blindly into his satchel or into his robes, and pulls out the silver flask. And as he uncups it and takes it back before anyone can say anything, they notice an insignia on the very bottom. Insignia looks to be of a star that is off center and surrounded with an eye in the very middle. And as he sips from it, he immediately just juts forward, beams shoot out of his eyes and his mouth. We're all blinded again.
Yeah!
So just a moment, love. Mama!
Yep. Okay. And see.
And see.
All right. All right. Right on Jesus' character. Oh! By the way, he gets the brunt of it. Yeah. All right. So now it is Daniel, right?
Yep.
I suppose it is.
Why do you have a D10 in your group? Where the fuck did that come from?
I've been drinking. this represents the alcohol.
That's the counter. Yeah. How many drinks are you in?
Pretty much. Apparently, it's a 7.
I mean, once it's when you hit D20 proof, you're done. You're done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As soon as I hit the 10, it just resets to a D20.
That's what I should tell my dice every time they just roll ones. Go home, dice your drunk.
I think your dice have a drinking problem.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's more than just drinking. I'm pretty sure they've moved on to a heroin.
I love it.
All right, so...
establish or...
I'll establish.
Okay.
Again, blinding white light, screaming, ah! Then nothing. It's all dark. Quiet. And then there's a sound of rustling paper. Mm-hmm. Pages being flipped. Y'all start to wake up, except, of course, Eugene, who's off being nefarious somewhere. Or the thing, or the thing that's taken over Eugene's.
Cut scene to Eugene being held up by his ankles as they're doing a like funnel.
Except it's like
Ed to my gun.
Except it's like a barrel of like blood.
Yeah.
Still. Woo! And
the funnel's actually a terrible.
That's sick, dude.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
Vera, Jeremiah, and Harold, you start sort of coming to, find yourself sort of sprawled on the floor and to the sound of pages being flipped. And as your eyes open and start looking around, you see you're back in the room where the Throth was. The dark waters are quiet, and those glass cases with the books that were shattered, one of the books is missing. Specifically, the King in Yellow.
Mm.
And there's Eugene, sort of sitting in a corner, quietly flipping through the King in Yellow.
Oh, God. Insane.
Eugene's eyes, as people's vision starts to refocus, are moving at a totally unnatural speed over the pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd say, really need to find a different way to fall asleep. My God. Eugene? I say, Harold, your friend. Your
is
friend
it Eugene
in the...
or is it Ernest that has it?
Sorry, Ernest. Sorry, Ernest.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, alright, just, it was curious.
Sorry. Okay. Eugene is, I'm mad at Eugene, but I'm terrified of Ernest.
Okay, Ernest, should you be reading that?
I thought
illiteracy was like a goal of your life.
See, here's the thing. I really shouldn't be reading this.
So maybe you should stop reading it?
Yeah.
Here,
Yeah, I should stop.
Listen, Ernest, this is very important. You should put that book... All right, it's too late for that.
Okay, Ernest, Harold, let me just...
Harold, don't touch it. If he's already started reading it, Harold, there's only one thing to do, and you know it's... Eugene? Ernest? Fuck, I should really put my glasses on, but I refuse. Ernest? What chapter are you on?
Appears to be the last one.
Oh, no. No,
right.
No.
All right.
Vera, I need you to do me a very important favor. Yeah. Need you to grab... He points over his shoulder at the Book of Nameless Cults, but it is right next to the Necronomicon, and it's just over the Trough of Black Inky Stuff.
Yes.
Need you to fetch that book and bring it here. It's very important, and I need that done very quickly.
Otherwise, Ernest is gone.
Not just Ernest. Might not have given you all of my notes on the King in Yellow, Harold.
What?
Sorry. Because...
Jeremiah?
Well, it's academia, man. You understand?
What's going to happen if he finishes reading?
A total time run specific spirit reversal? Possibly. Or another translation of the text is he's going to embody Haster and all of his magnificence at one point in time, which will become all points in time, rippling outward and then inward, making this a memory that only Haster will relive forever.
Oh, stop
and ever.
Blathering. Take the damn book. And Vera goes and, you know, yep. Just like breaks open the case with, mm-hmm. of the Book of Nameless Cults.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Like, she grabs a chair and just throws it into her. Very strong woman.
Okay.
Because these are like thick, sturdy Victorian chairs. And she grabs the book and hands it to you.
Thank you. He starts flipping open. All right. I'm going to try to counteract the book that he's reading right now. There's a very good chance that I'm going to not enjoy this. Whatever you do, do not interrupt, especially should you have any other texts on you. Now on three, I'm going to need a bunch of whispering in Vera's head. One, two, three.
Get the book. Reading Rainbow.
Help you.
Butterfly in the sky.
You can't go twice as high.
From
for the draw of the Necronomicon.
Don't read the Necronomicon. Only a guy can read it.
The girl couldn't comprehend it.
Rosie the Riveter is like,
you can do it.
Yep, and while that blathering is going on, Vera mm-hmm. is going, and much unlike, sure.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's, yeah. It's
yeah.
He's at the scene.
He's at the scene.
Okay, so black die for Daniel. This does not go well.
So, yeah, you're considering
Vera's, like, lockpicking the Necronomicon. Yeah,
Jeremiah's like, well, the glass is, like, broken.
Yeah. How about the glass is put back for everything?
No, the glass is broken. What you broke was, like, the jagged areas around
the
glass.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can just open the book.
Yeah.
And so you're grabbing for the book. As you're opening it, Jeremiah's starting to read from his book. Mm. And that's when
Ernest? Eugene. Yeah. Fuck it, just take his face, man. Let's see, take his face.
And he sort of, like, flips what looks to be the last page. And sort of like his head tilts up, looks straight at Jeremiah and sort of, Hastur.
Yeah. And so now they're just, yeah, you ask for the babbling to stop, it gets worse.
Babbling intensifies.
Exactly.
Boys.
Boys and their babbling.
I love it. Alright.
Summoning of the Elder Gods.
Angela. Would you like to establish or resolve?
I would like to resolve.
Okay. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I want to bring
Eugene.
No,
next
no.
time we really need to be. Nobody gets to start their names with the first of the same letter anymore.
Nope.
Because we apparently cannot handle.
No, this. Cannot handle this. Cannot handle this. It's like power yoga. I can't handle it, guys. All right. So I want to bring Eugene back into this. And so, let's see. An established, okay, so you're reading from the Necronomicon.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming all of this is not exactly as planned by the Silver Key. So,
hell no.
So all the partygoers over there might notice that the whatever was supposed to happen after mm-hmm. the black goo devoured our bodies mm-hmm. has yet to happen.
Uh-huh.
So that might be a way to, like,
I would say this, because she needs to be the focal point of the scene. The door to the chamber groans with stress from the center as ancient oak bends to a heavy load. And all of the partygoers who are having Eugene, don't give me that gold star for effort look, goddamn all of you. As Eugene is finishing his seventh goblet of wine, red liquid running down his chin to the hurrah of the rest of the partygoers as he is patted on the back for a job well done, for a sacrifice, and a wonderful, wonderful aspect is it. You brought learned, mostly minds, into this area, and you brought everything that the ritual required. You brought a person who was too wise for his own good. You brought someone who thought they were too wise and weren't. And you brought a charlatan and the paprika of the old ones, which is a drunk guy.
And of course he's actually switches mm-hmm. from his New York accent mm-hmm. as one guy slaps him on the back.
Yep.
No, and he switches to a English, very proper. And there's like, oh no, of course that is quite exciting. As Eugene is watching the bubbling of the doorway.
Yep.
He's like, but there's one last thing I forgot.
Black ichor starts to flow from underneath the doorway.
I forgot. This is quite embarrassing. There was the last part of the sacrifice. You see, it needed an audience.
And in Matrix, like, slow motion, as chips of wood fly past the frozen heads of the members of the Silver Lodge, a levitating Vera flows into the room, holding the Necronomicon in her hands, which is flipping pages of its own volition. And with every page, a light from the Necronomicon itself, with every flip of a page, a shadow is cast over her features, which makes her seem, for a moment, mummified and terrifying.
Eugene will step forward towards Vera, arms out, and just whisper, yes, take the body, knowledge. Take the body, knowledge.
Necrocomicon, become the body and we can be together finally. Be the book.
To which Vera answers.
Well, Angela's thinking bibliophile now has a whole new meaning.
Totally whatever you want.
Yep.
From this,
up to you.
Necronomicon is also the paprika. The old one.
Pretty much.
So whichever way you want to go through.
What can the Necronomicon do? Yes.
What can, I thought you were going to say, what can the Necronomicon do for you?
So my guy
is... Necronomicon is your lord and savior.
From what you hear, my guy supposedly is the ghoul book.
Mm-hmm.
And he is now claiming that you will become the Necrocomicon. Or the Necrocomicon will be in you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it sounds good to me. I don't know. Vera looks down at the book, and the light just becomes all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
It quickly glows bright enough that it actually, like, obscures Vera from everyone's sight. It's just, like, pure white light at this point, filling the room. So bright there's no shadows being cast at this point. It's
nice.
So all-encompassing. And just as quickly as the light swelled to fill the room, it disappears, and the book falls to the ground. Vera nowhere to be seen.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm going to say is actually
good.
A good ending.
It's about as good as it goes.
If I may.
Are we closing it up? Or
we're closing the scene, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because the
Vera has disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah, so the protagonist is, for the scene has disappeared. There's a...
No. Closing the game.
No. This is our really first. Yeah,
okay.
We have one more.
Yeah,
go
make sure.
No problem. But because this is Tilt, closes, there's mutterings of, the mutterings, scared, terrified mutterings of members of the lodge. What was that? Impossible! She had the book! No one can have the book! They would go insane! Where did she disappear to? No one has read the incantation of Kutara in years! Everyone knows that you don't just disappear, you trade! Yes, but what do you trade with? You trade with the Hound of Tindalos, you idiot! Lovely party! And there is a black presence that slowly envelops and snuffs out the lights from one part of the room towards all of the partygoers. I would say scene.
Okay.
Alright.
Eugene.
I just love the Hound of Tindalos.
Mm-hmm.
Alright. Eugene?
Okay.
Alright, Eugene. What's Ernest doing now?
I actually going to resolve the scene. White.
Okay.
Interesting.
Alright. Okay.
So the ghoul book... What is he doing?
I would say that the ghoul book, the cool book, not even... Yeah, I can remember your name if it's the ghoul book.
Yeah. What was the book you called it?
Book de Ghoul, basically.
Book de Ghoul, yes,
yeah,
something like that.
Something like that. Libre de Ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom of the Ghouls. the ghoul book is,
AKA Eugene,
mm-hmm. Is feverishly running down the hallways, though he is the embodiment of one of the forbidden texts, still can be eaten by another one of the products of a forbidden text. And Eugene is desperately trying to conjure up some sort of way to protect himself from a creature that can cross time, space, and traverse between material boundaries. The Hound of Tindalos, it knows, he knows, is a relentless pursuer. And the fact that it's been released from the Necronomicon means that no one will survive. It's just the no one in what order that Eugene is concerned with.
Eugene is clasping the lone book of the Necrocomicon in his arms
mm-hmm.
as he's running desperately. He hears something behind him ripping time and space almost to get apart
mm-hmm.
as it's chasing down. And as he rounds the corner, he slams into one of the red cloaks,
mm-hmm.
grabs him, and throws behind him, making sure not to look behind him because
mm-hmm.
he knows what behind him is. Even though he is not a sentient being, he's
mm-hmm.
not been human for 20 years ever since the book took control of Eugene. he knows that that knowledge is so much more powerful in that creature than the knowledge that was in his, that was him, mm-hmm. and it would consume him. And behind him, the camera shows, the man is literally the red cloaked, and literally both, he seems to get younger mm-hmm. before he immediately speeds up into a decrepit old man, turning to fine dust, spinning around until he's gone. Mm-hmm. And Eugene just keeps on running, running as the entire hallway behind him is all consumed. And finally, as he turns the corner, he finds that he has actually been trapped as the creature had cut off that area before him. And before him is nothing but darkness in the void. And finally, Eugene stops and he just hears the growling behind him. And he just kind of turns and with a slight smile he says on his face, it's like, I released you. I allowed you to come forth in order to get your fill so I can be with the one that I will always be with, the one knowledge that I always cherish. You can take this body, but my knowledge will be shared with the Necrocomicon. And he presses his face against the Necrocomicon, kissing the dark leather there. And it almost feels like his face melts into it like hot butter. He kisses it, moves his head as if it's the most intense kiss in the world.
Go on.
And then light is shared, and his body falls to the ground. The Necrocomicon seems thicker now, as if more pages has been added to it, mm-hmm. but it's still just stuck to his, like, half of his face, mm-hmm. as if his face has melted right into it, and mm-hmm. he's dead, and the body's dead.
All right.
I'm gonna say that's a win for him, though.
He
wanted to be closer to the Necrocomicon, and now he's part of it.
All right, nice. Okay. And now it's on to me. This is not looking good for me. Like, I got a 50-50 shot of this being good or bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Alright, so this is this is Jeremiah, who is reading feverishly from Nameless Cults. He's having a read off with the possessed Ernest, who's reading from the King in Yellow, and they are babbling in their incoherent languages. He is reading faster and faster, and he is summoning as much academic training for forbidden tomes and tongues as he is ever with, as he has ever held. And he sees a chance, to read faster. And he slides the book between he and Harold and says, Harold, we can only defeat this if you read the left passage and I read the right.
Of course.
It doesn't matter who reads, it is read. So, ready? Go! And they both start reading, feverishly, of the, King in Yellow. What do you guys want? White or black?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, not King in Yellow. Nameless Cults.
Yep.
I want black.
Okay. Jeremiah gets a sly smile, on his face and looks to his left and starts, digs a thumb underneath one of the pages. And then suddenly flips the page to the curse of Haster and starts reading feverishly from his side. Trying desperately to place the rest of the curse onto Harold. Harold, seeing this.
Okay. Harold, seeing this, looks upon the page, and in a stroke of brilliance, goes into his cloak, mm-hmm. into his pocket, pulls mm-hmm. out the page of the Curse of Haster that was in the other book.
Fucking cheat! Oh.
And uses a spell, spitting out the words, almost like bile, bouncing back mm-hmm. the curse upon, what was your name? Jeremiah.
And Jeremiah, and a wind kicks up as the King in Yellow is still read in the monotonous tone from the hypnotized Ernest. And Jeremiah is trying to keep the pages down, but the wind is a torrent of sound and motion, and it whips the page from his hand, and the book flies away almost of its own volition, and blunk into the black ichor of the trough, and Jeremiah screams, no, no, no! And jumps in after it. And impossible of impossible seems to fit right in.
Alright.
Wow.
Is this?
Pretty sure that second
is
right. A black die.
Yeah, that definitely does count as a black die. I'm going to establish. Harold, seeing what his archenemy set, his frenemy, dive into the dark pool, and looks upon his real friend, Ernest, speaking from the
Earnestly.
That's a funny way of showing it.
Okay.
It gets really monotonous.
Yeah.
37 pages of that.
And looking upon his friend Ernest, he goes, Ernest, it's... You can't hear me right now, but... I've enjoyed our talks. And honestly, you're an innocent man, and you don't deserve what's about to happen to you. And he comes upon... He goes towards Ernest, and he also holds the book. And while Ernest reads...
It really is the whole of Cthulhu.
Yep.
And as for each page that Ernest reads, Harold somehow reads it backwards. Page after page after page.
It's
and you can almost feel the energy pooling from his friend, from Ernest towards him, and as Harold's sanity goes, and Ernest's sanity comes back, he goes, run! Run!
You know, that's pretty bad.
I'm trying to save his life there, but you understand. I understand.
Something bad's happening.
No, that is true. Okay.
All right.
So the two endings that remain are both good.
So
I believe that
the very last dice can be anything.
It can be anything.
So I suggest you run. So I'm just putting that out there.
Okay.
Dark gods.
damn it. I'm gonna
establish a resolve.
Okay.
I think I've got this one. So okay. Ernest realizes, well, in a moment of extremely rare sobriety, to define the term a sobering moment, looks around and realizes what kind of screwed up situation he's in. He's in some sort of weird S&M club basement, reading from a dark passage, bubbling ichor to his left, people be stealing books. That chick floated away.
And let's not forget the holes of reality that are just... around.
Also hearing something that looks like a mix between a dog and
Exactly. He looks around and from a thin part of reality, he hears a very distinct sound near the door that he burst in. Meow. And the door slowly swings open. Does he run for it? It's into the graveyard once he came.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know, this is, I am not drunk enough for this.
As he barrels into the cemetery, he hears the creaking of, what sounds like floorboards, suffocated by years of wet dirt as bodies start crawling from the graves around him and clawing their way into the open London air. He runs faster, trying to keep his balance in the muddy soil that surrounds him. In a moment of desperation, he uncorks the strange flask that he found, looking for strength like Popeye's spinach, and drinks from it. And there is a pause and a howl as he is grabbed forcefully by a creature whose existence itself causes him to become, his hair grows white with terror as something that is beyond time space grabs him by the back of the jersey or the back of the cloak and races him at a speed incalculable to the center of London through walls, buildings, trains, people, and deposits him in the center of Piccadilly Square. I don't care if that's any fucking way in London.
So quickly that it's ripped his cloak and now he's there
naked again, holding the Silver Lodge flask with the Elder sign at the very bottom, naked, surrounded on a Friday night in the heavy rain by Londoners. Not the first time this has happened.
What are you looking at?
Oh my!
Gracious! Think of the children!
Oh, I am. He's not a good man.
come on, Governor. We'll get you down to a nice little drunk den.
Yeah, exactly. Two bobbies pick him up.
Hey!
What do you got to say for yourself?
You gotta stop meeting like this, boys.
And they carry him away. Yeah. All right,
that was a happy ending.
Yep.
Yeah.
God protects the, what is it, the saying? God protects the drunks and the babes or something. Yeah. Drunks and children, yeah.
Yep.
And ships named Enterprise.
And ships named Enterprise, yep. All right, so last one, and goes to Angela.
All right, I'm going to establish.
Okay.
And as Ernest is dragged off to the drunk tank, the screen goes white, much like the white light that happened when the Necronomicon apparently consumed Vera.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly a figure comes into focus in this white nothingness, and it is Vera.
Mm-hmm.
Totally unmarred by any of the events that have happened, although, you know, last that you had seen her, her hair was falling out of the curls that had been pinned up in, and her dress had the ichor and very grossness on it, and her dress is once again pristine. And she looks around confused as she's seen nothing but white, and then suddenly another figure comes into focus, and it is Eugene.
Hello. Vera?
Fitz.
Look at you, as beautiful as the time you was on the shelf. Simply knowledge.
What has become of us?
We have become one. You and I, both knowledges combined to make something far greater. Far deadlier.
Are we dangerous?
Words do not describe. He holds out his hand.
And she takes it.
And then, almost like, it's almost a symphony of children screaming, they begin to waltz. And spinning around until that white light just drowns them out again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And happy ending for Angela.
Sure. I mean, at this point, the problem with the Lovecraft story is the whole good-bad ending becomes real fluid.
Yeah. I mean, good is relative. Good for her, bad for everything else in the planet. You know?
All right,
the
so.
The Necrocomicon got more.
Yay.
It's thicker and better than ever.
So what we do, guys, at the very end, we roll all of our dice, and much like the tilt, we add up the whites, add up the blacks, and then we subtract one from the other.
Oh God.
So much trouble.
Oh my God. All right, so.
What'd you get?
Nine.
Nice.
Did you get 9 white or 9?
9 white.
10 black.
Oh, well then.
Yeah.
How'd you do, Daniel?
Wait, are we supposed to?
We add them together and subtract them. Yeah. Like the white.
So subtract the largest from the smallest.
Yes.
Okay, so that gives me 3 black.
Oh, yeah. Good times. All right, so let's start with...
Especially, sorry, 2 black, but yeah, anyway.
2 black?
Yeah.
Good times! Good job.
9 white.
9 white. Okay, let's start with the whites. Who is the highest of the whites?
We have 9 together.
Okay, each 9 white.
Mm-hmm.
unbelievable. White, 9. Nothing to crow about. Not better... But not way worse, either. Maybe the car is wrecked, or your wife is leaving you, or there's a court date. But compared to some of the other people you know, that's your ending. So as we go around assigning different dice, we say, you know, you keep that in mind. That's not the worst that a fiasco can be.
Mm-hmm.
I have 6 white. Weak. Hey, you're busted, beat, and broke down, but at least you've learned a lesson by human greed and frailty, right? It'll serve you well in prison, which is probably where you're headed.
Not bad.
All right. So then, black.
10 red.
10, all right.
Or 10 black, sorry.
No problem. 10 black. Pretty good. All things considered, you're coming out of this smelling like a rose. You're a little better off. Maybe you got the girl. Or maybe you just didn't get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2?
2 black.
Damn, dog. Brutal. Wounds that will never heal. For starters. Stuff sawed off, blown off, or burned off on your way to the grand, ignominious failure. Kiss whatever you care about goodbye. You may die, or you may not. That's it.
Fair enough.
All right. The guy who had no dog in this fight.
Pretty much, yeah. I blame the lot of you.
Yep. Amazing.
Fair enough.
All right. So with that in mind, Billy, let's start with you. Let's assign. You hold up a die. You say this is blah blah blah. Put it down, and then you describe the aftermath as the credits roll. All
right. The Bobbies pick up the weirdest thing that day. They find a man whose face is fused to the Necrocomicon, and slowly but surely they cut it out. Yeah. Though the booksellers are very worried about damaging the binder, so some of the skin has to remain. And slowly but surely, it's passed from book buyer until the present day. Until finally, one day, as an old man is working very carefully to restore it in a museum, he hears the sound of someone coming up towards the exhibit, and he looks out, confused. You know, "Excuse me, it's late. You're not supposed to be back here." And there's a man and a woman, very Victorian in almost how they dress, and they look towards the book, kind of like it misses it, and Eugene just says, "Oh, just dropped by to see an old friend."
I like that.
"Let us go, dear. How delightful it is to expend eternity." And just turn around and walk.
All right. Yeah.
It wasn't great. So, yeah.
No, don't spend yourself, though. You do this with every die.
Yeah, you still got a few more rounds to go.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Oh, this keeps going. Do a bad.
No, you just, it doesn't matter the die. This is how many descriptive flavors you get.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool.
And since I've got a bunch more than some of you, if you guys got a really, well, Angie's only got three, so you got a really burning story desire, tell me. You can have one of my die. I don't care.
Okay.
Because mine is not really that great.
If I knew that, I'm sorry, I thought that was a lesson. He doesn't say like, "Oh, spending eternity." He says, "Oh, I'm just here to see an old friend."
Okay.
And then the man and the woman, Vera and Eugene, just turn and walk away.
Okay. Great. Yeah. Okay. Good. So you're not headed to Nyarlathotep's divorce court yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is one of my die. This is, camera pans into a dusty old, library that's been cleared away of all of its, shelvings. And in the center, a pentagram has been carved, and there are, academic men and women standing around the pentagram chanting in unison. And it says 1936 and says, "Ia! Ia, Cthulhu, Ftagin, Ia, Ia, Cthulhu, Ftagin," and a ripple in time-space opens up on the center of the pentagram, and out slumps a call, like a freshly born baby, but deformed, and it's covered in viscous fluid and blood, and it is a beige flesh color. And they keep chanting over and over until one of them draws a blade and breaches the center of the pentagram and cuts open the squirming figure, and out pokes Jeremiah Rumworth, still in his entire outfit. "Oh my god, you don't understand how gross that was!"
Does he have the book at least?
No.
You weren't born holding a book, Billy.
Well, he's not born in his outfit either.
Maybe you were in.
This is Harold. Years ago, down in his luck, young man. He just got his master's, but he doesn't have money to try to get his PhD. He's trying to get information, trying to win a trip to Egypt, but nothing's come up, and he's thinking of just quitting and becoming a laborer with his father.
Egyptian expeditions, they need security. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nothing bad happens to them.
You can get on film.
And he's standing there in a bar down his luck. A serious man shows up. "Hello, good sir. I was wondering. I heard about you. I need fresh minds for an expedition I'm planning. And I thought for some odd reason you would be the one. I've had this map on me. Would you like to read it?" And as Harold's greedy eyes look at the map, he doesn't notice the strange yellow insignia upon the cloak of the individual.
Nice. All right. Daniel.
So the two Bobbies drag Ernest off the drunk tank. It's dice number one here. And as he's dragged in, he's there
for some reason, despite the fact that he felt sober, completely sober, mere minutes ago, mere moments ago, before being dragged, you know, kicking and screaming through the ragged fabric of reality, you don't really get to, you know, read the King in Yellow and sort of come out just, you know, fresh as you please to the other side. So by the time they're getting into the drunk tank, he is, as if he was three sheets of the wind, like, come on, everybody, join me! Hail the Dark Ones! Hail the Dark Ones! Oh, come on, you don't know this one? They open the door to the drunk tank. There's like three other guys in there, all in different stages of drunkenness and or belligerence. And they just toss Ernest in there. And he just stumbles to the ground again. Door closes.
And he cracks the back of his head. And as a small dribble of blood comes on from the skull onto the tile, it forms a small spiral and then disappears. That's your thing, man.
That's my thing, man.
The camera cuts back to the humble shop of Vera Hughes, where she performed her so-called psychic events and performed tarot readings and palm readings and looked into her crystal ball to help people see their futures. And apparently Vera owned the building outright, because days, weeks, months, years pass with no one so much as looking in the window. The knickknacks that covered the shelves that were supposed to give her the aura of being a woman of mystery, they first grow dusty. Eventually some of them begin to break down. The building will shift her as the foundation settles and the crystal from her crystal ball rolls off the table, shattering on the floor, spilling shards everywhere across the dusty and dirty floor. Mice come in and begin to make themselves at home. And so the house that once housed a woman who thought that she was perhaps better than many of the poor fools that walked in her door falls into disrepair, and she is forgotten.
Ooh, the last images of a mouse slowly eating the portrait, nice. Ridding it of its face.
Nice.
Nice. Really? Okay. Let me see. I was just thinking of this. Real quick. Since some of us actually have a lot of dice, would you guys agree to three scenes and then?
Yeah, that's
yeah, that's three scenes.
Because I do not have four more scenes in me.
Yeah,
so two more each.
Yeah, more each.
I got like five more. I'm
actually going to shift to the future.
Just going to keep making up drunk songs.
The Adventures of Ernest and his drunk songs can go on.
The first scene was the 1960s, and now it's the 1980s, and the couple, you know, are merely just sitting in a park watching, inseparable, Vera staring tiredly ahead while, of course, Ernest, goddammit, Eugene is standing right next to her. And finally, she leans to the side and she mumbles, "How long do we have of this?" And Eugene just says, "Oh, not too long, merely eternity." And then they just go back to feeding the pigeons.
That's the thing about the Necronomicon. Hates humans. Loves birds. Loves birds. Yep. All right. This is... this is... Jeremiah Rumworth, who is sitting slumped over, shoulders and back arched, disbelieving, staring at an old man across a desk in the... in a busy or a small, cluttered office of an academic, and he's feverishly saying, "This is amazing." He's feverishly saying, "Like, this is amazing. I mean, I had no idea that the ritual would work. I mean, the writings alone. This will revolutionize occult theory. This will truly make what is possible." And Jeremiah says, "Look here, Yank. What did you bring me in for here for? You dragged me out of." "I was lost in space-time. Space-time, Mr. Jeremiah. You were lost in space and time. And yet this conversation seems to be taking forever.
What is it that you want?
Well, Mr. Jeremiah, we've contacted London. We've contacted your old landlord who you rented the bookstore from and verified your identity. And I would just like to offer you, on behalf of Miskatonic University, would you like a teaching position?
What?
The scene shifts to Harold reading from the book, The King in Yellow. Mm-hmm. And his vision, everything around him goes from black to pure white. His mouth still speaking the words. He looks up and he sees some strange humanoid shade approaching him. Someone in yellow cloaks with like black and yellow tentacles sprouting from everywhere. Mm-hmm. And Harold looks upon the being, and just nods his head, understanding his purpose.
Nice.
So
I just pictured that's going to you, Dave, Daniel, and you just start. Start singing
this. 99 bottles of beer.
99 sacrifice. Go.
No, actually, that's not far. You see, so Bobby's head off. You know, it's late at night. There's really not that many people at the station. There really only is one guy who's left behind to keep an eye on the drunks, and he's there at his desk. Because even back then, there's fake paperwork to fill out, and so he's doing it. And you can hear back in the drunk tank, there's that guy they dragged in, and he's like, yeah, 99 bottles of blood on the wall, 99 bottles of blood. You take one down and splash it around.
Spiral.
99 bottles of blood. And, like, the scene sort of stops. I must have finally fallen asleep. And the screaming starts. Except it's not just one person screaming. There's just voices and voices and voices screaming. Guy goes in, gets in, opens the door. What's going on? And there's Ernest sitting on the floor. The walls are painted in blood. The three other people who were in that cell are in pieces around him. Nobody knows. It's impossible. Like, he had no weapons. He's just there, still naked. No blood on him. But blood all over the walls. And he looks up, eyes just gleaming with madness, and holds up what he's apparently made a macrame version of the Elder Sign out of some intestines.
Nice!
Isn't it lovely, Kappa? Isn't it lovely?
Cash, you're creepy.
That's awesome. Right. Says the living embodiment of the Necronomicon. That's awesome. All right.
The Necronomicon has limits. All right.
No problem.
We come back to Eugene and Vera as a couple apparently haunting eternity. And we see them on the outskirts of a forest clearing where several robed figures have gathered around a fire and they are chanting some infernal, unknown language. And Vera and Eugene both just look incredibly bored.
Oh, virgin sacrifice again? Can't they do something a little bit different?
They don't even know what it is they're attempting to do. They read it on the internet.
Google.
And yet, again, we are forced to appear.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll kill those on the left. You take the one on the right, dear.
Sounds like business as usual.
Mm-hmm. And then the screams of that forest.
They're screaming. You need to run.
2014. Sitting around a Dungeons and Dragons. No, I'm not going to do that.
No, come on.
Only if I can have one more scene after I'll do it.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
Sitting around a table, recording a game. Jesus, of course, standing there. David, Daniel, of course, is sitting there for the cat, that infernal cat.
She does not look happy to be
does
there.
Not look happy. You know, Jesus said, like, wow, that's it, guys. What'd you think? And, Eugene, now known as William, looks towards Vara, now known as Angela, and said, well, that was different. Hey, gentlemen, I have another game we can play. And it slowly but surely, Angela gets a smile on her face. And from their apartment in New York City, screams are heard. Okay.
And the cats feasted for weeks.
not the size of your cats. Days, maybe. Days. Okay, so this is my final scene. This is Jeremiah Rumworth sitting behind a... sitting on top of the front of a desk in an auditorium. Just fresh after one of his many renowned lectures for students, freshmen, about the inconsistencies of our concept of temporal space flow. Subtext, time is a lie and so is hope. An introductory guide to the old ones and forbidden texts. People are ushering out. People are saying, Professor, that was a really, really great speech. Thank you so much. That was a really fascinating Q&A. Yes, that's fine. Thank you. The door's over there. Yes. Temporal time, space, and all that. Don't get lost. On your way out. out, cretins! And finally, all of the students file out, except for a young, attractive, but strangely symmetrical young brunette girl. She must be about 19, 20 years old, and she's dressed in the in even somewhat conservative wool outfit of Miskatonic University for the 1930s. She's clutching her books against her chest, and she says, Professor? And he says, rubbing his eyes, Jeremiah says, what is it now? I told you to... Yes? He seems bewitched by her. As he looks on her face, she says, I think that what you said about the hubris of man's attempt to understand the natural realm and the inevitable slide towards our degenerative mental state that can only be stopped by the acceptance that hope in itself is a fiction that we have constructed and must discard, like that of the Tooth Fairy, to be one of the most brilliant and honestly charming and impassioned, inspiring things, and I would like to use it for one of my projects. Jeremiah gets closer to him and says, well, perhaps we can talk about it more in my office. She says, Marsh, of the Innsmouth Marshes.
This is also 2014. The studio is Warner Brothers. High office, president of the company. Sitting there, big man, used to getting his way. And he's just sitting there on his chair looking down at some person in front of him. All right. I don't know how you got this email. I don't know how you got into this meeting, but apparently the people below can't stop talking about you, or about a lot of other things now, apparently. Listen, what the hell do you want? Like, I heard something about, like, a $1 million idea? He's like, yes, sir. I want to revolutionize the movie industry. I have something that will be the next Star Wars. It will be the next great achievement seen around the world. It's a simple little play, but I think you'll enjoy it.
Nice.
All right. My last two red dice. Mm-hmm. Last scene. You know, around 1930 or so, there was a little mental hospital you may have heard of in London called Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. That's spelled B-E-T-H-L-E-M, although the locals mostly called it Bedlam. Actually got moved around that area, around that time. It was moved out to the outskirts of London. I don't know why somebody would want that right there, smack dab in the middle of the city.
Fucking hipsters.
Fucking it's gentrification. You know, what can I say? But in that hospital, there's a room.
It's a room in the back where they put and keep those that are... What's the word I use? He says criminally insane. And as a nervous-looking young man walks the halls in the company of a rather portly older nurse, she tells this young man, who told her he works for a certain Miskatonic University, and he's doing a research project for Professor was it Professor Rumworth, and says she's like, oh, he's actually been one of our model patients. He's been so helpful of late. I really think he's getting better. He's been calm. He's been lucid. So I think you're going to have a very good conversation, she says, as they reach the door. And it's a big metal door. And she opens it up. And as she unlocks it, she turns to him and goes, He's even started writing a play that we're going to have for all the other patients. Opens the door, and there is Eugene. The word Hastur carved into his skin everywhere, sort of in a lotus position. His eyes open, completely yellow, and he just
nice.
Back to the wandering tale of Vera and Eugene. This time picking up in the aftermath of one of the bloodbaths that they have precipitated. And as Vera just stands dejected once again in a pile of gore at her feet, just looks to Eugene and asks, how much longer will this continue? The corners of the world that are unknown grow fewer and fewer by the day, by the minute. How much longer do we have?
Unfortunately, I'd say. We stop existing when the knowledge of us finally ceases. When no one knows about the Necrocomicon. In the moment that we finally strike out to destroy that last person, that last... well, now, gigabyte of information. We will finally die and be no more. Shall we continue looking for that last bit?
I thought you would never ask.
Okay.
Last one. Last because one. You did the fan service, yeah. We're all dead thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gave the fans what they want, just all of us dying at your hands.
Yep. They knew it was coming.
Sitting in the middle of a pristine forest, a forest that probably has never been seen in probably 1,000 years, sits Eugene, just staring at a tree, and suddenly, almost as if she's walked out of reality herself, Vera appears next to him, and he's like, how did you find me? And she, of course, she's like, we are connected. Time and space mean nothing to knowledge. And he nods his head. He's like, well, let's get this over with. I did promise you one. She's like, you did. This is an experience that I wish to... the experience I wish to see for myself. He nods his head. He cuts his hand. Black ichor starting to come out of it. Vera actually does the same, and they grab hands together, black ichor forming together, dribbling down into the soil, and finally they let go, and they both stare down at this black, oozing substance staring up at them, and Vera cants her head to the side and says, it's so adorable. And he's like, yes, quiet, our child. Where is this place? I don't know. Somewhere in future Colorado. Someplace called Founders Falls in the future. And then she's like, shall we continue? And he's like, quiet. Grabs her hand, and again they fade away, leaving that oozing pile. As a deer runs by, it shoots out, wraps around the neck of it, and drags it away.
Ha!
Nice.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the Bookhounds of London Fiasco playset.
All right.
A little known origin story of a certain recurring gamer's character.
Yes. So is that officially canon or was that for fun?
That would be some ballsy hubris.
Considering this came straight from Billy, yeah. I believe it's by definition canon.
Yes. I don't know. I think it might be fun. That means Fandible is
off. You just wrote fan fiction of your own.
That means you have to use all of Lovecraft's crazy mythos.
We'll think about it. It's just for
that's
fun.
Charity.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what people in the Billyverse who know about the Ink Monster have the best guess on. They're like, mm-hmm. Oh, obviously, the Necronomicon gained female form, and the Cult of Ghouls gained a male form, and they fell in love, and then they made a baby. It's like, what? What?
Where did the Ink Monster come from?
Hey, it's 2014. Yeah. It's on the internet. Rule 63.
Two book abominations love each other very much.
Exactly. When two knowledges love each other, abominations
like
love each other.
That's like that card game Slash we play where it's like, tell me how the Ink Monster happened. And someone's like, Necronomicon, Cult the Ghouls, did the nasty.
Ghouls was bored one night and, started cruising Craigslist and, they boned.
Honestly, that would not be, I have the idea of what creates the Ink Monster. That was just a little bit of fun. Right, how about this? This is like the Marvel Universe. There's different.
This is Earth 23.
Just imagine Angela's character Vera as the living embodiment of the Necronomicon. Like, where did the Ink Monster come from? She's like out at a bar one night and just kind of like drinking, absinthe on fire and shit, looking, despondently into her reflection. Like, how did it come to this? Is that how I spend my Saturday nights? Like, I am the embodiment of all that will destroy thoughts. And then it's like her phone goes off and it says like, from Cult of Ghouls, you up?
Nice.
All right. Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, hope you enjoyed our recording of the book Hounds of London. If you like what you're listening to, then we've got plenty more where that came from on the Fandible.com role-playing website. If you like what you hear, then you might like what we write, because we now, I am proud to say, regularly post shit on our own blog. Woo! That's right. Mm-hmm. We did it. And by we, I mean Angela did it. She motivated all of us. You will like the Fanda blog. We have two games on our website on Fandicade. We have Horatio's Story, and we also have the 2048 video game. And we hope to have more as soon as I actually make good on my promise to learn how to code. Learn how to code. Yes, exactly. So get ready for Dick Tetris!
That exists on Newgrounds.
And do we want to wish somebody a happy birthday out there?
Right! We would like to wish... I lost my thing. Wait. Can we edit that out?
Nope.
Okay.
Turn it up. It looks like a duck.
Thank you. Okay, so everybody, we are actually playing this to celebrate the one and only H.P. Lovecraft's birthday. Woo! Yes, that's right. The Gentleman of Providence was born around the time in which we were going to post this. I and the rest of Fandible are big fans of his writing. Not so much of his racist, sexist stuff, but,
You probably think of me as a human.
Speak for yourself. You don't speak for all of us.
Absolutely. And to cap it all off, we're all wearing silly hats. We made masks, which we'll put up on the site because
there are pictures. And,
yeah. Exactly.
None of us is running for office.
Actually, yeah. And also, listeners, that's what we wear when we fight crime in New York City.
So
we hope that you liked this a lot. And now I believe I brought you guys some mango-flavored Necronomicon mead that I got from my home state of Maine.
Bullshit. We saw it. It's from Michigan, asshole.
Yeah. Oh, it's from Michigan?
Yeah, it's actually.
Sons of bitches, they told me.
To you.
They left. Wait. That's right. That's right.
That's what they do in the home state.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't actually make anything.
I was looking at the label. I'm like, this is closer to my hometown than David's.
I like how, you should call people from that city and be like, do you guys make this? Because if they disavow it, that means that, like, nobody wants that. All right, so, ladies and gentlemen.
But I want to drink it, so.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the H.P. Lovecraft birthday version of Fiasco for Fandible.com, role-playing podcast, and good night, listeners.
Good night, listeners.
Good night.
We can't, like, rip off their sweet-ass, like, side up. No, I don't want to piss. I do not want to piss off those guys.
You can rip off some
of them. Oh, yeah, okay, we should probably... It's,
Jeremiah was a bullfrog. Damn it. He was a good friend of mine. Damn it. He never understood a single word he said. But I helped him drinking wine.
What I do?
He held his hand in my fine wine.
Where?
Joy to the world.
Thank you, good night.
All the boys and girls now. Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea.
Cthulhu.
Joy to you and me.
One more time.
Joy to the world. All the boys and girls
now. Oh, we're falling apart.
Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea. Joy to you and me.
All right, cut it out.
Cut it out.
Stop it. Not done.